Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Uh-huh.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next 3 hours. Uncle Dom in the 10 o'clock hour. Bill Bender in the 11 o'clock hour. It is a game week here at the Fan, and we will continue to get you set for the Buckeyes and the Hoosiers on Saturday. Taking NBC to school this morning and listening to the Juice guys, and I hear he goes, Dad, Coach Day still hasn't named a starting quarterback, and I go, no, and he goes, but you said that he would by now, and I said, I know, and he said, well, don't we have a game on Saturday? Yeah, don't we need to have a starting quarterback? Actually, we do. There has to be someone who has to physically take the first snap. Like, that has to happen. That must happen on Saturday at some point at 3:30. And I said, yes, son, these are all valid questions. And yes, Dad did not have it. I thought Roundtable was the perfect time for Coach to do it. I was on with Bob and Beam just 10 minutes, 20 minutes ago, and we talked about it. I see it the way that Bob and Beam and so many do. Like, it's probably going to be Kyle. And probably if it's because of deference to the fact that he's been here a veteran or whatever, if it's just too close to call at this point, it's like at some point you've just got to do it. And I think had he done it last night and just said, I think the simple way to do that is, and Bob said, well, I said, well, why didn't he just do it? And Bob said, well, what if he doesn't know? And I feel like that just can't be possible that he doesn't know. And even if it were something where they're both still so even, and you have to name one, if it's Kyle or Devin, all you have to do is say, Kyle's going to start, both are going to play, they're co-starters, but somebody has to take the first snaps, and it's going to be Kyle. That's it. That's all you got to do. They're both going to play. We all know that. They're going to play for a while, probably not just in this game, could be the next couple of games before you get into having one on a more permanent basis. But it just feels like it was such an easy thing to do that would have made this – press conference, it's at noon, right, today? Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll carry it. So at noon today, because that's all anyone's going to ask about for 25 minutes is that.
Yeah.
I just think it was a simple way.
I liked your logic yesterday that, yeah, you could throw it out there. It's not a definitive thing. It's just saying here is the plan for Indiana. Now, maybe there's gamesmanship, but I just don't even think that's necessary for Ohio State against Indiana. When Indiana knows that they're going to see both quarterbacks anyway, so whatever they can prepare, as we've mentioned many times, you don't really have film on either of these guys, but whatever they're preparing that's going to be a little bit different for either quarterback, they're doing anyways. Even if you tell them the plan, it's not going to be like, oh, well, McCord's going to be there the first two series. Well, then all we have to do is prepare for McCord. No, they're still going to prepare for Devin Brown in that scenario. And then, like you said, or Bob said to you, well, what if he just doesn't know? Well, then I don't feel like you're going to know by Saturday. So you should know something by now that, like, this is the plan that we're moving forward with, because coaches hate unknown. And they're just living in this unknown pool right now with this quarterback.
I reject the notion that he doesn't know. Like, he might not want to say it out loud, but he's seen a lot of the two of them, Reese.
I'm going to steal a gimmick from another market. I have a theory.
Okay.
He's in a feud with Skip Mossick and wouldn't give Skipper that kind of a scoop.
It was going to be Skip's big moment.
Yep. Not today, Mr. Mossick.
Not today, Skip. Can't have it. Well, so
is he going to flip a coin? Is it going to come down to that? Is it just going to be?
If he doesn't know before Saturday, Indiana's, I don't think, good enough to give you a really great sense of who your quarterback's going to lead. Quarterback's going to be, or QB1's going to be, to lead you to Indianapolis.
No, it's what I said yesterday. Like, all you need is the layups to be layups. That's it. So whichever one can do that when the bullets are live, that's the guy you go with. And I reject the notion that he doesn't know, like, this far. Like, he's got a gut feeling. Now, he might not want to say it out loud.
You should go today and just be like, I reject you, sir!
I should. I should go to the presser today and just say, if he says
liar!
He's
liar!
They're both, you know, they're making each other. Well, we'll play some of the stuff from Roundtable last night a little bit later. But, like, they put so even. I reject that notion.
Erroneous.
David, I'm sorry, is that a question?
No,
you're
statement.
Gonna, no, just a statement. Then just
that's
leave.
A statement of
don't
fact.
Don't even stay for the rest of the
that
presser.
I don't believe you. That you don't know.
He'd have
you might not want to say it out loud, but you know.
The ultimate twist of irony, James carry you out.
Threes, like I'm behind, hands behind my back, like I'm going into custody.
James just puts you under his arm
jail.
Like you're a toddler being taken out of the store. That's what it would be.
Right. It would be like that. Yeah, jeez. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it happens today at noon. Maybe it doesn't. You know, and to the point of, like, I don't think it's gamesmanship at all because they're very similar players. Nobody's seen either one of them. What are you going to look at Kyle from 2 years ago? He's a totally different human than he was then. You're going to run the same type of style. It's not like you're choosing between Braxton Miller and Cardale Jones. Like, this isn't going to help Indiana in any way, shape, or form. By the way, they're going gamesmanship on kickers, Tom Allen. What are we doing?
No, he really doesn't know. That one, I believe. Tom Allen really doesn't know.
We got 30 people suck out of the portal. Like, one of them is like, oh, you might have a leg.
One of them will kick, I guess. Speaking of kickers, yesterday the Browns cut Cade York, and they traded. Well, I guess, to be fair,
they have not
officially cut Cade York
till 4 o'clock today.
Yeah, so reportedly cut Cade York. Now, that's really important. I guess first, let's get the chronology right here. They traded for Dustin Hopkins of the Chargers. So they bring him in. He's going to kick. I said yesterday on this show, there was just no way you could go against Cincinnati with Cade York kicking. It was long past time of that. I really believe that yesterday morning, the plan was to keep Cade York and trade for a kicker. And the reason for that is Cade York has immense talent. Immense. This is a guy who routinely in practice will hit 70-yard field goals. It is a guy last year who hit a 58-yarder to beat Carolina on the road. He hit one of the most incredible kicks in college football history in the fog at the Swamp. He was easily regarded as one of the best kicking prospects in recent years. So how does all of this happen? Well, you guys remember the name Roberto Aguayo?
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to you? Okay.
Florida State was even
more automatic than York at Florida State. Like, he was a true weapon. Like, he could kick it from anywhere. The Bucs drafted him high. And it didn't work. It fell flat. Got in his head. Couldn't find his way out of it. If somebody did a case study on drafted kickers and how it works out, my hunch is it wouldn't be very good. We kind of have to go back to, like, Sebastian Janikowski to find one that actually went.
Yeah, and most kickers do fall into this thing where at some point in their career with the team that they're at, they get the yips and it doesn't work out for them. And there's some sort of mental block. And a lot of times those guys actually can bounce around and find a new spot and get it back. But it doesn't seem like something where you can just hold out and stay a great kicker. I mean, you're talking about Sebastian Janikowski. He's a guy who got to stay pretty much his entire career there. Justin Tuck with the Ravens is kind of a rare guy who's like, okay, he's really good and he's just been good for years now. A lot of times kickers do just bounce around because teams also, you know, it's an easily interchangeable roster spot because, you know, it's just the skill set of a kicker. And can you come out and kick? There's nothing like a playbook to learn or anything. But, yeah, maybe that's something that can happen for Cade York. But you mentioned Aguayo. Didn't really happen for him. He bounced around a little bit and never got it back. So you can also fall into that situation. But, yeah, like, don't think the Browns are wrong if they waive Cade York and he ends up on another team and actually looks lights out for them this season. Sometimes it's just that change of scenery and it changes things for a kicker because you can tell watching Cade York that it is mental, that he has the leg talent to get these kicks to where they need to be. And he's just not connecting. Somewhere between his head and his foot, things are disconnected.
Where after he crushed that 58-yarder in week one and the Cleveland Browns on their X account at Browns tweeted, and this got retweeted and reposted all day yesterday, that's why you draft a kicker. Well, that's why you never tweet.
No, that's it. That's the thing that, you know, all of these NFL teams, I mean, hell, look what Ohio State did over the weekend with the quarterbacks on their Twitter. Like, they all want engagement.
Something got me today. I got a thing that just said QB1, and it said Ohio State football. And I was like, what's this? It was a notification trying to get me to use one of the, like I think it was the Nerd Association Twitter, which I don't use very often anymore. Yeah. And I clicked on it because it was like QB1, and it was a quote tweet of C.J. Stroud being announced as a starter. And I was like, oh, that almost got me, though.
Yeah. So, look, they there's just no way that they could possibly go into this season with him as the kicker. They couldn't. And I think that they wanted to keep him in the operation. So I think the reason that it got leaked yesterday that they were cutting him was, well, I wonder if there's any value that we can get for him, because he will get picked up on waivers. He's got too much talent. Like, he's perfect, honestly, for Arizona or Houston, especially like Arizona, who's in full tank. Like, come to a dome. We don't care if you miss kicks early. We'll work with you.
In fact, we'd prefer if you did.
We prefer if you did. We'll work with you throughout the season. We'll nurture you. You'll kick in a dome. It's the desert. It's all going to be good. So, I think that probably what they're trying to do is find a home for him. I also wouldn't be surprised if wouldn't surprise me at all if, in fact, he ended up somehow back there, like on the practice squad, if somehow they were able to get him through waivers. I think that's what they would prefer in this. This is an interesting tweet from Wolfman Matt, great listener of the program. In the LSU-Florida Fog game that I was referring to, where York hit the game winner, the kicker that missed a kick to tie it at the end for Florida was Evan McPherson. And I do think that a big reason the Browns drafted York is because of McPherson's play the year before for Cincinnati, because he was so lights out. And it's like, we can't not have a weapon like that. We have everything else. We can't not have a weapon. The other thing I'll say about Cade, and I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, in regard to mental health, social anxiety, there is no doubt in my mind that Cade York read everything that was written about him and said about him. And if there was a way, I mean, this is a guy in his early 20s. Like, if there was a way to like shut off phones, everyone would be a lot better off. Because there's no question that he got in his own head by reading what was written about him. And I'm not talking about, and this is the other differentiator that guys have a hard time understanding, I'm not talking about like the media writing about him. I'm talking about people, normal people on social, tweeting at him. That stuff, that tracks.
To the point where he reportedly thought he needed somebody monitoring his social media for him to keep an eye on that stuff. And
that's sad.
Yeah. Did you hear did you hear the comments from Matthew Stafford's wife on her podcast about how he doesn't feel like he can connect with this young locker room because they finish a meeting, finish a practice, everybody goes in the locker room and just looks at their phone the whole time. And nobody's talking.
No, I'm telling you, and it's worse at the younger ages. Like, when these kids in middle school start getting phones and they're just locked in, man, they're just on a screen and locked into it. And, we're very strict with it. We pull phone, like Peyton has one, the other two don't, but it's very strict. I pull it all the time, but there's some parents who use it almost like a babysitting device and the kids just stare at the thing all the time. It's just the way that they're growing up is with these things in their faces. There's nobody who thinks it's good. Nobody. We all know it sucks. On the Stafford thing though, like him or Kyler, who ends up in Atlanta?
I feel like
Atlanta's ready-made. Arthur Smith is, I mean, really, Stafford would be perfect for that offense. Like what Smith, he would be just a more talented Tannehill, which is what they ran in Tennessee. They have all those weapons. He played at Georgia. Kelly's from Georgia.
It would all depend a little bit too on like how real is the pup list for Kyler versus how much of that is just Arizona just wants a tank anyway. So they're like, well, we'll keep you out at least for the first 4 weeks and figure it out from there. Or is he actually still rehabbing from that torn ACL?
But Stafford
has injury issues too.
He does. But like, to me, like him to Atlanta, Stafford to Atlanta, go win the South. He didn't even have to be what he was when LA won the Super Bowl. He doesn't have to be that great. He's fine. Just hit the easy stuff. There'll be a lot of it with competent quarterback play. One of the things we learned in 2-a-days was that Atlanta's got a really good roster. They just don't have the quarterback sorted out yet. There were other things we learned. We want to get into that coming up next. You'll hear from Coach Day in terms of some of his comments that he made last night on Roundtable. The Real Truth hits at 10 o'clock. Dom and Bill as well. We're off and running on a Tuesday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Ambition with Friends is sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss, sustainable weight loss without medication. Solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Check them out there. This is funny. There's a radio show that's on, a national radio show that's on this morning that says Matthew Stafford. This is the tweet that they put out on their show page. Matthew Stafford reportedly cannot connect with young teammates. No, no, not reportedly. His wife said it. It's not a report. She's saying you can take the reportedly out. Matthew Stafford having trouble to connect with young teammates. Per wife. No, reportedly.
Could you imagine if he goes out there at his next availability and says, "Nah, she's lying to you. I never said that."
That's one of those ones where, like, he gets the next, like, when he gets home and he sees, like, what's happened, I love you, honey, but what are we doing? Why would you go into this on your little podcast? What are you doing? Now I got to answer for this.
Well,
you can't
call our podcast little. You got to be very careful.
Well, no,
I would
purposely be just slightly passive aggressive. Like, just slightly.
But wouldn't you be worried that then the conversation would turn around? Oh, you think my podcast is little, huh?
Well, that's fine.
And then she goes, you know what else I think's little? And then she starts crushing you.
Well,
and goes on her podcast to crush you.
I still think he can win the long term there, but not much. You bring up some good points, but I think you got to give it a little bit of, like, what are you doing? I don't need this.
It is hard for me to believe that he went to her and explained this situation and was like, can you please this out there on your people. Podcast so that maybe it'll open the room and everybody will start talking about it?
You said what?
Now is everybody in the facility going to call him out anytime he's on his phone in the locker room?
Yeah, true. I mean, it's a mess. We did two-a-days. We wrapped it up yesterday with the Steelers and the Browns, and it's interesting. I really enjoy doing that series. I enjoy doing the 20 most interesting programs from the standpoint of I like to learn about teams that I don't normally think about. So hopefully that helped you guys in your betting on Tipico. Hopefully it helped you with your fantasy football as you play that and those drafts start to get ramped up this weekend. Hopefully there's benefit to all of that. I do think that when you think about what I perceived about the NFL going into it and what I feel like I know about it now was probably pretty similar. And you can use Stafford as an example. The disconnect and the disproportionate, I guess would be the better use, the disproportionate power at the quarterback position, the AFC versus the NFC, has never been bigger. And you can go down the NFC, you go division by division, and we did, and you just start looking, boy, just imagine if they had a quarterback in Tampa Bay, in Atlanta. I mean, that's one division. Just imagine if they had a great quarterback. Imagine if the Saints had Trevor Lawrence. Like what that would look like if they had a straight dude at quarterback. You can do that throughout the gambles that are being made on young quarterbacks, whether it's Jordan Love in Green Bay or Justin Fields, hoping that he can take a big step. I saw somebody this morning picking the Bears to go 12-5. That's a big leap, right? In 1 year. You had the 49ers who did everything they could and gave up everything to go get their quarterback of their choosing. And then they dealt him for a fourth round pick and are starting a guy who was the very last pick in the draft. That's probably the thing that was confirmed more than anything else is the amount of talent at the quarterback position in the AFC in their prime is so great that even if you are a team like Pittsburgh, which is really loaded, is the quarterback good enough where you can make noise in your own division, let alone your own conference? So that's the thing that was overwhelming to me. And then there was a lot of road to nowhere teams like, I'm not exactly sure what Tennessee's plan is. LA is a great one with the Rams. Clearly, the Cardinals are tanking. There are those type of things that were confirmed, but I think that gap, the gulf between the two conferences, was even more alarming than I thought.
Yeah, as we went through it, it's similar to, like, if you go through and do all the over-unders, it's a little bit harder to keep track of it math-wise, but generally you're probably going to say too many overs that, like, actually can't actually happen due to matchups and when they play. And that happened with the distinction of the teams at the end in the AFC. I didn't keep track of it, but I'm sure we overcounted on playoff teams. There can only be seven from the AFC, and there are three divisions where there are three teams each that you wouldn't be surprised if they made the playoffs. And obviously that's already nine. Yeah. And then you still have to make room for the Jaguars or whoever wins the South. I'm presuming it's going to be the Jaguars. So that's the biggest thing in the AFC is that there's going to be good teams left out of the playoffs. And it's crazy how now it is all does seem to be stacked in one side, but I remember, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, it felt like, man, there aren't enough good quarterbacks in the NFL anymore. There are these guys at the top, and then huge gaps and everything. And I don't know if it was the trickle-up of the college concepts and putting guys in situations where they're better suited for the skill set that they've been working on since high school and in college and getting to the NFL, or if guys have just gotten better over a generation or what happened. But now there seems to be more than enough quarterbacks in the NFL to fill it out. But they all happen to be in the AFC. Like, there are 14 really good quarterbacks in the NFL that if you're just going by top 14 teams, you'd have really good quarterback matchups in the playoffs. The problem is, I don't know, 10 of them are in the AFC.
I do think, to your point, when you saw like Brady and Manning and Rivers and Roethlisberger all start to kind of wind down their careers, there were younger guys that just weren't as good as those guys early on in their careers. And so those guys have kind of gone by the wayside a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where you've seen a little bit more, I don't know if it's balanced quarterback play, but all the quarterbacks have played really well. And that's because they've been given time to actually do the damn thing. Like, Pat Mahomes was given some time to do the damn thing. Justin Herbert, similarly, Josh Allen, in a little less of a sense. Joe Burrow is kind of the one guy that's like, hey, I'm ready now.
Yeah, I think the other thing is you bring up a good point. There's a gulf, both of you guys do, there's a gulf that happened as the guys you just mentioned, Reese, grew up and grew old.
Oh, Joe Flacco, too. I didn't mean to miss him.
Elite.
Sorry.
There's that when, as those guys got old, like Rodgers is still there, obviously. He was like the one constant in the NFC. But they missed on a ton of young quarterbacks. I mean, the Winstons, the Mariotas, there was like Luck retired before it really was fully formed. Like, there's a generation there, kind of, not a generation, but there's like a 5 to 8 year period.
Like, is Goff the best of that grouping?
Correct. Goff, Wentz, Winston. Like, none of those guys hit. And then you just did the thing you just did with were these guys ready. Those guys are all picked in the last 5 years. They've all been dudes. I mean, the one draft, Trubisky's the first one, pretty big miss by the Bears, but both Watson and Mahomes are in that draft, right? You think about Herbert, Allen are in the same draft. That's craziness. Like, they're franchise guys that you're identifying, and unfortunately, they all just ended up in the AFC. So there's just going to be this disproportionate power shifted on their side of the thing. And that's when you think about, bring it back to what you were talking about in the previous segment. That's why you can't have Cade York kicking for you if you're the Browns. You paid $230 million because you've worked since Bernie Kosar to land a franchise quarterback and one in his prime with more baggage than has ever been put on the back of a Land Rover as on safari in Africa becomes available. And this is the price. And it wasn't just you willing to pay it. It was Atlanta. It was Carolina. It was the Saints. And why were they all willing to pay it? Because you can't get proven guys. This was proven, ready-made. Go get him. So that's why they did it. Because if they want to be competitive during Myles Garrett, Nick Chubb, Denzel Ward, if you want, they want to, Joel Bitonio, they want to be competitive in their prime. There's only so far that someone of Baker Mayfield's talent could take him.
And they saw that AFC. Around the league that it was, switching to that no, you're not going to be able to build up everything and just get a Flacco guy to get hot and win a Super Bowl anymore.
Not in the AFC. You can do that in San Francisco if you have like five top 100 players. You can do it.
And maybe one of the smartest offensive minds we've seen.
Yeah. That's one of the great what ifs. If he had just stayed and just took those picks, I mean, that's Tyreek Hill, Bradley Chubb. Like, that's what that is. They could have taken Justin Fields and put him with all of that. Ridiculous. Speaking of quarterbacks, Ryan Day had an opportunity. He passed. We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, here's what's up on a Tuesday edition. I was dead wrong. No quarterback named last night on Roundtable. Reese reportedly, Eric Reeser reportedly, reporting rather that this is a personal front from Ryan Day towards Skip Moss.
I'm hearing it's a vendetta towards Skipper.
Vendetta.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. There you go. I mean, you heard it. It's being reported by Reese that this was something personal, and a vendetta is the word that we're hearing in the reporting on this. So I guess maybe that's it. That's the only reason he didn't do it. He was, of course, asked about the two quarterbacks a lot. I guess let's just play it. This is him on Kyle and Devin.
They have to bring it every day. And when you have somebody that you're competing against every day in practice, it brings out the best in you because you can't take a play off. Every play matters. It was great during senior tackle 1 year that Pete Warner said that one of the things that, you know, he wanted to make sure he left in terms of a legacy was that every play matters, every rep matters. And he was so right about that. And we use that a lot around here. And when you're competing against somebody where it's a neck and neck, every play matters. And these guys have been working hard at it now. It's gone from the spring to now. And, you know, we got to play a game on Saturday. And at the end of the day, the quarterback room has to be grading out a champion. They have to be part of the solution here. And the good news is, again, that they have a really good supporting cast around them. They don't need to do anything extraordinary, but they need to lead the team and be competitive and be tough.
They don't need to do anything extraordinary. Just go out there and execute.
Layups. That's it.
He needs to make sure, yeah, that whatever they've seen that has held them back from naming one as a starter, whatever little hiccups that come up every few days in practice, they need to see that those are anomalies and not something that is going to happen all the time. I guess that's all they're waiting. To me, that seems like all they could be waiting for.
Look, I mean, they've never seen Devin Brown take a snap that mattered. I mean, high school? As great as he's been, there's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing to go off of. They've seen very little of Kyle. I mean, he was really good as a true freshman against Akron. I get it. But nevertheless, like, the stage didn't seem too big for him, but it was 2 years ago. I mean, last year, every week we would do three things we want to see. And for the vast majority of those garbage games that we played in the middle of the season, we would say we would like to see Kyle McCord run the offense. Not just hand it off and run clock, like run the offense a little bit. And for whatever reason, that just couldn't happen. I don't know if that was because games just weren't out of hand quite enough, or if it was if you're trying, like CJ's going after the Heisman, I don't know. But there was probably opportunity last year to see Kyle play in games and run the actual offense, and it just didn't happen. So I get how, from Ryan's perspective, I got to see both of these guys play. Clearly, it's been so even. I think it is very fair to say, and I believe it to be factually true, that Kyle McCord had the lead in this thing for a long, long time and was a presumptive guy. I mean, Austin, who knows Ryan as much as anybody, we've talked to Tim about this. There has always been like this feeling of, yeah, Kyle will win this job. So obviously, Devin has caught up in camp, maybe even superseded. Who knows? There's some people think that maybe he has from time to time. But with Devin, you just haven't seen it. And Kyle's been here a long time. And so you want to see both. That's fine. You do have to name a guy. And I just think it'd be very simple to just say Kyle or Devin's going to start. Both are going to play. To me, let me think what you guys have to say about this. To me, it's a far bigger deal if Devin starts the opener than if Kyle does.
Yeah, I think that's the right take, that it says, okay, that they've seen enough that Devin has actually, you know, gotten ahead of it and said, we're going to start with this guy, and that it's still up in the air and Kyle could win it, but that Devin has done enough to say that, yeah, he could be number one. It's weird that, yeah, he hasn't even, like you said, with the plan of like what they're going to do against Indiana, because at least if you do that, then it becomes something that people analyze and want to talk about, but it doesn't become speculation. And I think speculation is the worst thing, and what Ryan Day wanted to avoid with all of this. That, oh, we have a quarterback, but instead they don't, and now all we have to do every day, and we love doing it, it's great, but yeah, for content wise, but it's just, yeah, every day it's something to talk about, and we don't know because we just haven't seen the guys play. That's the other thing that makes it so difficult for me to talk about, that even going back to 2015, we had seen so much of JT Barrett and Cardale Jones.
For sure, yeah.
These guys, I have no idea which one's better. You know, there's little reports, little whispers that you hear about things, but I've really never seen either guy play, say, for 1-2 years ago when he was a freshman. So I have no idea who's better. So we will all be kind of learning on the fly against Indiana.
I'm also hearing that if Matt Andrews is in the room today for Ryan Day's press conference, he won't say anything about the quarterback situation either. So
then if Skip's in the room?
No, Matt Andrews.
Oh, wow.
We're anti-Andrews.
It extends to Skip's guys too.
I don't know, because, again, Matty's supposed to be in the room. And if that's the case, from what I'm hearing, you're not going to get any information from him.
Sources.
Oh.
So this is...
Okay. All right.
This is tricky. Yeah. And I'm also... I'm not convinced reps against Indiana are going to show one way or the other, unless somebody just falls completely on their face. And I don't believe that to be the case if they're a 4 or 5-star, 5-star-plus, 6-star-plus living quarterback recruited to the Ohio State University under Ryan Day.
I still think there's a chance one can look sharper against Indiana. I don't think Indiana's going to make the plays against them, but there's still just a little bit that you can sometimes see the zip or the accuracy of a ball, because Ohio State's receivers are good enough that they're going to have separation. But did Marvin Harrison have to slow down and come back to the ball on that one? And whereas with the other quarterback, it caught him right in stride and he was able to waltz into the end zone. I think you can see stuff like that against any opponent.
Yeah, the live bullets part of it's real, right? Like they're going to get hit, right? They're going to get hit. And how do you respond to getting hit? They'll get hit. They're going to get hit. There is going to be someone who's trying to inflict pain on them on a snap in, snap out basis. I think either way, you're going to be very good. Both can play. Again, I wish I knew more about Devin's style. All that you have is like this reporting, you know, little bit of, you know, you talk to people in the program about the type of player he is. Everybody says they're all very similar. Anytime we have Austin on or Tim on, or when you talk to people inside the program, that they're both very, very similar players, but you just don't know. Devin is the unknown. I think I know what it'll look like with Kyle McCord. I think I have a pretty good idea what that'll look like. I don't know what it'll look like with Devin Brown as the quarterback. Because I just haven't seen it. I know it's going to look different in a 33.
And is that the little special that we don't know that he'll show in some of these games leading up to Notre Dame that we say, okay, yeah, I think it should be this guy because he's just got a little bit of an it factor.
Well, that's the it, right? Does he have some juice in terms of persona, in terms of the way he carries himself? Is the ceiling a little higher because of all of those things? Who knows? It's all just conjecture at this point. They know in the building. They know. So that's kind of the way that thing plays out. There is one connection that I had not considered in this, and it's a little bit of a bad job out of me, but luckily the MIT kids, as it were, have passed along some information about why maybe we don't have a quarterback yet. And we will have that for you coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The best hair on the air. You are listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right. So, there could be another reason here.
What are you hearing?
Well, this is from the MIT kids, probably the dean of the MIT kids, Matt Guerrieri. You guys know who that is? Does that name mean anything to you? It was familiar to me, but I didn't put it together, and that's a bad job out of me. Co-defensive coordinator safeties at Indiana.
Okay.
He worked here last year. So he would have seen Devin and Kyle in practice a lot. So there could be that part of it as well. So while I don't know anything about Devin Brown other than what I hear, the co-defensive coordinator at Indiana does. And he would have a feel of one way or the other. So there is a competitive advantage for Coach Day in holding off on this as long as possible. Because this is you're going to have to just trust some stuff on this. There could be enough different about the two that the preparation would be different one way or another. So everybody keeps saying they're so much more similar. Maybe they're not quite as similar as everyone is saying. And we can't say this from an educated standpoint because we just haven't seen Devin play. We don't know what it looks like. At least we've seen Kyle. So that is something that is out there. And that could be why we haven't had fill in the blank as the starter. Now, at some point, you're going to have to name one. So does that come today? Does that come Thursday when he has his quick availability? Who knows? But he is buying time of Indiana not knowing who to prepare for specifically because their co-defensive coordinator was here.
But they do know how to prepare for both. I don't know. At a certain point, I think coaches, if that's the reason.
Coaches might be overthinking it.
Overdo
but I'm
this
just,
stuff.
That
yeah.
is, that's a real truth, that there's somebody who has seen them in their staff. Now, they're still Indiana. Right. But coaches also don't think of it like we do. You know, we think it's like it's Indiana. Like, come on, roll out the ball. Let's go. That's not how coaches think of it. They're panicked. They don't want to be upset. They're worried about losing anybody.
Yeah, I was reading from Kirby Smart today, and he was saying our focus isn't on winning 3 championships. It's on UT, whatever they're playing this year, an FCS,
yeah.
an FCS
Rat
opponent
poison.
In week one. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Sure. But yeah, no, coaches, you're right. They don't think of it that way. But so what's more of a competitive advantage? The fact that you actually do know your starting quarterback and you're working with that and like everybody on the team is moving forward with it, or Indiana knows who is starting at quarterback?
I think it's a lethal combination of them both. So I think it's these guys both deserve to play. They've got a guy over there who knows these guys a little bit. The longer we hold off on it, the bigger advantage we get. It really doesn't matter which one starts, truly, because they're both going to play equal. And all of us will make a big deal about who starts. Although I truly won't if it's Kyle. I think it's a much bigger deal if Devin is named the starter. That, to me, seems like a much bigger sea change, right? Because then that feels like, okay, then he's come a long way to usurp the lead that Kyle had going into spring, right?
Yeah, it feels like it would be pretty easy to write it off as a coach and just say, we weren't sure, you know, which one was going to be, you know, the starter, and we're moving forward, so they're both going to play. Kyle's got seniority. He's going to be in the first series. But they're co-starters. Yeah.
I really hope for Tom Allen, he just looks at this whole thing and he goes, fine, well, if Ryan's not going to name a quarterback, I won't either, and I won't name a kicker. Just thinking he's got that kind of gamesmanship over it, like it matters.
Yeah. So there's probably two things you're doing. Like I said earlier in the week, like whichever one lets the layups be layups, that's the guy you want because that's how good this is. And that's definitely good enough to win the first three. We'll find out if it's good enough to beat Notre Dame, beat Penn State, beat Michigan. But it does feel like that Devin's ceiling might be slightly higher, and maybe that's something that you want to see in games too. So that's the way that this thing's going to play out. That could be why we haven't had a starter named. Either way, the offense is so loaded everywhere else that you say to yourself, man, just put this position, put this football Ferrari in a position to succeed. Ryan Day was on Roundtable last night. He was asked about the offense. He said it'll be basic but not vanilla. Here's Coach Day.
You want to keep as many things off their plate as possible, but you have to have contingency plans in place for different things that may show up in a first game. You know, we always kind of deal with this when we're dealing with the first game. Certainly last year, you know, it was a certain set of issues with a new coordinator. It's a little different this year. Matt Guerrieri, who was on our staff last year, is their defense coordinator. And, you know, I know that Tom has kind of kept his system in place, but certainly Matt knows us and knows what we do here, knows our system, you know, and so he'll have his flavor on what he does there, but also so does Tom and some of the other guys on the staff. So there's a lot that comes with the first game, and so we'll just have to have a bunch of plans in place and try to keep it simple for the players, but, you know, put the onus on the coordinators and the coaches.
And that's the Matt he was referring to in the soundbite right there. So that's the connection on those things. So will he do it today at noon? I don't know. It could go throughout the end of the week. I don't know if it will be something like it was in 2015 where you don't know until one of them runs out.
How far can he take it? Can he send both of them out there on the first possession and they both line up in the shotgun?
Do you guys remember this? Tress did this in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, he sent Pryor
wasn't
out there too.
Because he didn't want Pryor answering questions?
Yeah. Pryor had started. God, what he did to Beckman. I love Tress, but he did Beckman wrong. Beckman, first team All-Big Ten quarterback the year before, plays everybody comes back. Threes, Malcolm, all of them come back. Let's go win a national title with Beanie and Beckman and Pro Style, and we're gonna beat you and all those things. They play at USC. Beanie doesn't play, and Beckman gets beaten pretty good. And next time out, it's Pryor as a starting quarterback, who is obviously an enormous recruit. And Pryor was almost – I don't even know if he was ever available. And they made Beckman, because Beckman was voted a captain, they made Beckman come to every post-game press conference all year and answer questions about the quarterback, of which he had been unseated by, right? So you get to the Fiesta Bowl. Well, every player has to be available at the Fiesta Bowl, all of them. Tress did not make Pryor available. So the Fiesta Bowl was pissed about it, bigly. So what happens? You open the room, there's every player at a dais. We all run to Todd Beckman, like, where's Terrell? Are you starting? Are you starting in the Fiesta Bowl? And sure enough, he did. He started. Pryor went out to wide receiver, and the rest was history. So it has happened around here.
Did Pryor catch
Tress with a, you know, like, LD opened a spite store against Mocha Joe for coffee. Tress had a spite press conference and a spite starting quarterback.
Did Pryor catch a touchdown pass in that game?
He threw one to him. I think he might have.
I think he did, yeah. Was that against Texas?
Colt McCoy, Texas.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, yeah, I remember that game now. It's hard to remember that one and the one that didn't happen. I get that mixed up with the Sugar Bowl
game sometimes,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, those two. So it could be done. You could run one of them out in the slot and then the other one takes the snaps, and then theoretically they both start. Or you could run a jet sweep from one to the other.
Some sort of double wild card type.
Yeah,
both touch it. A quarterback rollout reverse to the other quarterback who then throws it downfield.
There you go. I know this. I can't wait to watch him play. I'm just, the unknown is tantalizing. It's really fun. I mean, this is a game that in many years, okay, Indiana, fine, whatever. Like, CJ's going to rip it up, whatever. You're good. This is a complete unknown. And I think that's going to make for a very fun game on Saturday. We'll hit the Real Truth Big Ten edition coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Tuesday. Couple of hits on social. Cam with this. Do you think Day has any concern that the quarterback he doesn't pick leaves is Burrow and will bite him later? I don't think he can coach that way. Cameron, I don't think he can. He's got to do what's best for his team. He can't. This is the world. He knows the world he operates in. And by the way, like, for all of the, Burrow was obviously generational at LSU, but you did have Haskins and Fields, so it kind of worked for both. I know you don't get the national title, you don't get the Heisman, but like, you had two stud quarterbacks,
and you got 3 years studs of them instead of two. And Burrow's junior year was pretty good, but not like his senior year.
No, and also, like, as great as the talent was, I mean, that LSU team might go down as one of the greatest college football teams ever assembled. The pure talent. I mean, they had Chase and Jefferson both on that team, first round pick, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire at running back, like, loaded. So that's one that's, I think we can look back on it because of what Burrow did, but in the moment, and by the way, Urban did not want Burrow going anywhere. Like, killed him. You know, they did him a solid by having the conversation with him in May. Buckeye Bar Talk with this. Indiana in the following 2 weeks might end up being the greatest judge because both quarterbacks will get stats. But if one makes a dumb mistake, then the probability of him making similar mistakes in a serious game are higher. I think that's the big thing Day wants to see. I agree. That's why I say the layups need to be layups. Just make the easy stuff. Don't make the big mistakes. I agree with that. One of the great historians, Mark Kuntz, good friend of the program, pointing out that in 78, Woody had both Schleister and Rod Gerald, who's a quarterback turn receiver, start the opener. So he's done it.
Okay. It has been done before at Ohio State.
Good job. Good job at a mark on that. All right, let's hit the Real Truth.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Little Real Truth Big Ten edition. So all of these will have to do with Big Ten teams or the conference at large. Michigan will win the Big Ten. Is that the real truth?
No, I don't think it's the real truth. You're gonna hear from Harbaugh here in a second. Something tells me he's just, I mean, he's had too much damn good luck. Harbaugh has. Like, enough. I saw Bruce Feldman pick him to win the national title. It is his best team, I think, offensively, that he's had there. I don't know if they're quite on par defensively to some of the better teams that they had when they had Don Brown and those guys. Their schedule is very fortuitous for them. There's really nothing from a road. They got to beat Penn State. They got to beat Ohio State. That's it. Those are big tasks, though. And I think the Big Ten with those three teams are all three top 10 teams in the country. But I do not think that Jim Harbaugh is going to win three consecutive Big Ten championships. Not the real truth, Bootsy. Go to bed.
I think it's not the real truth. It's hard because it's not quite a question of Michigan or the field, because I do think the winner is going to come from the East. I don't think really anybody's disagreeing with that. And the three teams you named, Ohio State, Penn State, or Michigan, are the three teams that are really the real candidates to win the Big Ten this year. So does Michigan get tripped up somewhere, and is that enough? Because you're right. One of the things is their only challenges are Ohio State and Penn State, but if they lose to one of those, that other team has to also win out so as to not get into a tiebreaker situation and figure it out from there. It just feels like they have the best path to the Big Ten title game, but mm-hmm. Winning three in a row is tough. Ohio State did four in a row, I believe, from like 2017 to... They did three in a row, at least. But did they get the fourth one? Yeah, because they won 2020. So I think it was 2017 to 2020. Ohio State did four in a row in recent memory. But three is a task, too. I don't know. It really just comes down to, Ohio State beating them. And I don't know what I'm comfortable with.
Penn State might get them, too. Penn State.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, Penn State can get them.
It's not the real truth. Yeah, these dopes are going to get fat. And then on Veterans Day, Penn State's going to do it for the troops.
Do it for all of us.
In America. And take down Michigan. And I think Ohio State does finally exercise this odd 3-year stretch and get the Wolverines at the Big House.
It's time.
And then play like Purdue in the Big Ten title game, because of course they will.
Of course Purdue would come.
This is James Franklin's best team. Is that the real truth?
I don't think it's... I think it has the highest ceiling because of the quarterback. And the run game is really good. They got studs all over the place. So their offensive line's great. Defensive line's great. The run game's unbelievable. I think it's the high... I don't think it's the real truth that it's his best team right now, but I think it's the highest ceiling of any James Franklin team that we've seen since he's been at Penn State because of what Drew Aller can be. Everybody you talk to over there says he's a dude. He's ready to go. And we saw that last year. The stage was not too big for him when he played last year. Not at all. So I think it's the highest ceiling. Right now, I don't know if it's his best. I mean, he's had teams with Saquon Barkley and Micah Parsons. Like, they've had a lot of guys over there through the years. Receivers who have matched up with some of those times as well. They've had a lot of really good teams over there. But I do think this one is the highest ceiling.
I think that's right, that it's going to be the highest ceiling. It's tough to pick full-on best team, because even that 2016 one where they got the better of Ohio State and they went on to win the Big Ten, they lost to Pitt early in the season, they lost to USC in the Rose Bowl in that one, so where do you find the rankings for that and everything? But because of their quarterback situation has been so weird under Franklin, it really goes all the way back to the Bill O'Brien era, that like the guys don't seem to really get that much better. They stay the same guy. So is Drew Aller, a five-star coming out of high school, is he actually improving to full-on stud in college, or is he still at that level of five-star in high school? And that's going to be the big decision maker here. But I think Drew Aller is going to be a guy who's going to prove that he's pretty good and actually is ready to be up there in the echelon of quarterbacks, especially in a year where a lot of unknowns at quarterbacks just across the country in general. And I think Drew Aller can get that. So I think this is the real truth.
It is the real truth if the quarterback's correct. I mean, we've already seen the change it made at Notre Dame. Like, it's a one-game sample size, obviously, but if you have a guy that's ready to go and that can make everything look easier for everybody else on the offense, yeah. And that's what it relies on. That's what James Franklin, that's what Bill O'Brien, neither of those two, and even Joe Paterno, were never really able to do outside of championship seasons for Paterno, is land the dude at quarterback. Like, that's been the thing for Penn State. Similarly with Michigan. That's what it's going to take.
So Hackenberg was a big recruit.
Huge recruit.
He was big. There's a kid named Anthony Morelli who was a five-star back in the early 2000s, who was a kid out of PA who was a big recruit. That's one of the great sliding doors is Fields.
Yeah.
That's one of the great ones.
But even not even being big recruits, Clifford and Trace McSorley never really got better.
No.
They were just the same guy all the years.
Really good college quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By November, we'll all understand why Luke Fickell went to Wisconsin. Is that the real truth?
Yes. Yeah. He went to Wisconsin, and I still think it's one of the most curious. This doesn't change my overall take of this, that this was a curious job for Luke Fickell to take. But I do think what he saw in their roster, what he saw in an ability to hammer the portal was – remember, he took this job. Obviously, USC and UCLA were coming in, but Washington and Oregon at the time were not. And I think he took this job with, this is one that you look at and you go, this is kind of ready-made. And you can win here in a big way. And they've given him the full keys. I mean, he's going to run spread at Wisconsin. So he's got the full keys to the kingdom. Their roster's pretty good. They'll win the West. And I think their record, I got to pull it up. Do you guys have their record up? Or I'm sorry, their schedule up.
I have it up right now.
Give it to me from a Big Ten opponent.
It is really interesting that you put by November, because they open the season Buffalo at Washington State, Georgia Southern. Then it's all Big Ten from there. At Purdue and Rutgers. Their last three games in October are Iowa at home, at Illinois, and Ohio State at home. So, yes, if they...
By November, we'll know.
If they pull through that, then we would know. But what if they don't pull through that? What if they go 1-2? In that stretch. Then what do we know about Luke Fickell?
I think it's the real truth, because I don't think they will. I think he will be one loss going into November.
I disagree. I don't think Hawkeyes
get him.
I think all three of them could get him. I think it's possible. I don't see it just turning on and being able to turn on a dime like that, and all of a sudden you got spread concepts at at Wisconsin and they're just working and you can just change that overnight. Let's flesh that out for a second.
Let's say that happens.
Okay.
He gets got by three of them or two out of three. Is there any path for him sustaining winning there? Because I think it's critical. I think we would all agree that it's critical that he gets going right away.
Says there's a new Wisconsin. This is what we're doing here.
I don't think he can go 8-4 in year one.
That would make it difficult on him and to change it around and, yeah, actually change the culture there. Because if he hits, then immediately kids will take notice of that and say, okay, I can go to Wisconsin for a completely different thing than what I thought before. But
that would be something if that happens. If he falls on his face by November, that would be
a
lot to overcome.
That's going to be my official prediction for it, that I just don't think Wisconsin can do. I've seen it before. People try to bring the things into the Big Ten, and yeah, it worked at Ohio State, but can you actually sustain that and make it work at other places? It remains to be seen for me, so I'll believe it when I see it, and my prediction is that it doesn't work that way.
I kind of think I understand why already. I think he saw a Power 5 opportunity, and the job I think he would have rather had, obviously, is Ohio State, and it wasn't going to be open for a while. And so he took the one that's available now and the opportunity to kind of have that Power 5 coaching job. I mean, I get what Cincinnati's doing in the Big 12, but you can't really do what you can do at Cincinnati, what you can do at Wisconsin. So I kind of get it. At least I think I do right now. So I would say it's the real truth because I think he's going to have success there. And I think we're going to look at November, look at Wisconsin and say, yeah, this was a great fit for both parties.
It's a good point. Knowing Luke a little bit, I don't think...
Because he wasn't going to USC. Like, he wasn't going that far.
I think he would have gone to USC. I think he would have gone to Oklahoma.
They've offered him.
Well, no, he's coaching. I mean, he's coaching in a playoff. So, like, there was no jobs in this cycle. You know, it was one of those things where because he had to coach in the playoff, he couldn't take the jobs that he wanted. Like, he would be the head coach. I'm fully convinced he'd be the head coach at Notre Dame if Cincinnati hadn't made the playoff. I'm convinced of it. I'm sure of it. And unfortunately, like, he couldn't wait out. I mean, if all of a sudden you lose your stock, what's old boy at Matt Campbell at Iowa State?
Yeah.
No one's talking about him. And he had a moment where, you know, he was pissed off he didn't get an interview for the Ohio State job. And everyone's always going to – Harbaugh going to the NFL, they're going to bring Matt Campbell to Michigan. But he's still at Iowa State, man, hanging around. So, yeah, that's – I will say Luke has so much good currency here that if or when Ryan ever decides to go to the NFL or whatever it may be, if he just goes 9-3-ish over there, he would be at the top of the line to come home. I don't think that there's any doubt that that would be the progression. But I don't think he's thinking about that now. That could be a byproduct of it. You can skip the next couple. I don't want to talk about either one of them.
All right, you just want to get to Mel Tucker then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I like the last two.
All right.
I don't want to do Illinois and Nebraska. Blank them.
Mel Tucker will be the next Big Ten coach to lose his job. Is that the real truth?
All right, let's pull it up.
Who are the coaches?
So he got $95 million. Now, they have... So part of the reason he got... Wasn't Ishbia the one behind this contract for him? It wasn't Gilbert. I think it was Ishbia. Like, the idea that Michigan State has two mortgage broker billionaires who hate each other and use, like, their donations to the school as, like, some sort of a pecking order of who is more important is just comedy to me. But I'm pretty sure it's Ishbia who's behind the deal for Mel Tucker. So if Ishbia wants to write the check, then they can get out of anything. In terms of the next Big Ten coach to lose his job.
Besides David Braun of Northwestern.
Right. I don't think it's the real truth. I think the next Big Ten coach to lose his job will be Tom Allen.
That's the name I was looking at.
I'm going to say that's not the real truth. I think Mel's going to get at least one more year because he's only going into year three.
Like, if you run through him, Tom Allen seems like the right one. Like, yeah. Brett Bielema, I think, is
just
safe.
Just got there.
Kirk Ferentz is never going to get fired.
No.
Mike Locks, I think they like Mike Locksley at Maryland, and he's, I think, made some improvement. Plus, I think they'd be really interested to see what happens once they get out of the Big Ten East and have a little bit more of an even schedule. Jim Harbaugh. Now, Jim Harbaugh could leave, but I don't think they're
fired.
I don't think they're firing him. PJ Fleck is a maybe. Matt Rhule just got there. Ryan Day's not going to get fired. James Franklin, if they were going to pull the trigger on James Franklin, I think they would have already done it by now. I think they're secure with what he brings to them. Ryan Walters in his first year at Purdue. Greg Schiano, I don't think Rutgers wants to move off of him. And then Luke Fickell just got to Wisconsin. Yeah. Tom Allen.
That's the one.
It's not the real truth. But, you know, I don't see, like, for those schools you mentioned outside of Michigan State, those feel like ceiling coaches. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Mel Tucker's the best Michigan State can do. I feel like they should be able to do better than what he's provided, considering what they're paying him.
I don't even know what that job is in this Big Ten. Like, to me, can that ever be what Dino was there again? I don't think so. I think they took advantage of a moment in time when Ohio State was going through transition and Michigan was god-awful. Like, I don't know if they can win five-star battles against the Buckeyes and the Wolverines anymore.
Yeah, and then, you know, even on that note, like, Penn State was, like, working through a lot of stuff at that time, too.
They benefited tremendously from that moment in time in the Big Ten.
They had a chance to kind of be considered in that top tier, and now they're going to be in that next tier with the Iowas and the maybe Nebraska under Rhule. Wisconsin, I'm not exactly sure where they're going to fall in this, but that's kind of the grouping I can see them in. Last one, College Game Day should either stick with Big and Rich or move on from coming to your city.
Well, facts. They are moving on. It's Darius Rucker, Lainey Wilson, and then a band I'd never heard.
Cadillac 3?
Something. Yeah.
But they're doing Come Into Your City.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they're doing their version of
Come Into Your City.
Yeah.
Okay. Look. So it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's not like anyone was like, oh, I got to have Big and Rich or else it's not game day. Like, it's we're coming to your sit day thing is what matters. So I'm going to say, to me, this is not the real truth because it doesn't really matter to me.
Didn't the waiting all day for Sunday night used to be somebody else?
Faith Hill and then Carrie Underwood.
So you know what? I think that's a pretty good example that it doesn't really matter. I think it's going to be fine.
It doesn't matter. It's just the song that matters. Yeah. Well, we had the Bubba Sparks version we played the other day that people forgot.
Just go back
existed.
To Bubba.
That was great. That's a great little jingle.
I think it's better than coming to your city.
Yeah, I think it was too. I think it was pretty strong. Jim Harbaugh came strong at the state of the sport. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
Well, you can't say that the Jim Harbaugh era at Michigan ever lacked for intrigue or interest. Always something going on up there, from not eating chicken because they're nervous birds and milk with steak and flirting with NFL jobs and
sleeping in tree houses.
You forgot Ric Flair and the Migos.
He's just a different cat, man.
Who's got it better than us music videos?
And then the beaten down Harbaugh. Like, Urban sucks all the life out of the guy. He was a shadow of himself. Like,
putting
okay,
up how
I'll take
short
half
he
the
thought
money.
Yeah, JT like, was, and after
oh
that.
Oh, my God. Urban just absolutely strangled him out. And then somehow, like a phoenix, he rises from death. It's unbelievable. So he's got his a team that many consider his best. It might be. I think it's definitely his offensive best that he's had there. He's on very sound footing there. But even this lead up to this season has been interesting. Self-imposed penalty in terms of suspension of game sitting out. And then his offensive coordinator got dinged earlier in the week, and he's missing the opener as well. So
again,
there's
self-imposed.
A lot going on. Self-imposed again. Yeah. So like not in conjunction with the NCAA. Originally it was, and the NCAA said, actually, we need a little more pound of flesh.
But we also have to investigate it more.
This is the one instance where I'm on his side, Harbaugh's side. Like this actually would be, I would just say, go to hell, NCAA. We don't need to. Well, I'll sit none. How about that? But they did. So he had his availability yesterday, and this is how he let it off. Let's have a listen.
I continue to advocate for that today. A system of revenue sharing with the student athletes. I'm aware and understand that when someone speaks out in defense of those without a voice, attempts are made to diminish the individual's character and credibility. As a former player and current coach, mentoring many of these student athletes, what I want to do is be a voice for the student athletes. I want them to be treated with the respect and the dignity that they deserve. What I don't understand is how the NCAA television networks, conferences, universities, and coaches can continue to pull in millions, and in some cases, billions of dollars in revenue off the efforts of college student athletes across the country without providing enough opportunity to share in the ever-increasing revenues.
So did he, was he reading this?
This was part, that was 52 seconds of a 6-minute soliloquy.
Prepared statement?
He went on. This was off the top of his presser. So I,
do we think this is scripted or do we think this was off the cuff?
I think it was scripted. Yeah.
To get to 6 minutes would lead you to believe that it's off the cuff, though, because that's a long speech.
Well, I wonder if it was prepared, but all in his head. And so then he kind of went, but like it wasn't something that he just all of a sudden came out there. But yeah, probably not as James Franklin. He'd actually bring props with him.
Right, right. I think, so first of all, there's a lot in that. And largely this is, if you want to get to the real truth, and I just did it in the last segment, the real truth is here that what Harbaugh wants is what Saban wants. It's what Ryan Day wants. It's what Dabo Swinney wants. What they want is control of roster again. And they know that the only way that they can truly get it is to have parameters on it. And they know that the only way you can have true parameters on the rosters in college football is to revenue share it. Now, the problem is their bosses like all the money. And guess what? So do they. It's nice making $8 million a year living in Ann Arbor coaching the alma mater. That's pretty good. That's probably better than anything you're going to get in the NFL. So that's always the part that's always lost on this thing. It's this notion of college athletes have never been in a better position than they are right now. They've never had more power. They've never had more ability to make money. Not only power in terms of financial power, but also like they're standing on a roster power, their livelihood power. They can transfer at any point they want to a better situation if they want to. There are consequences for that, but all of that makes Jim Harbaugh's job tougher. All he wants is control back, and he's willing to give up some of the money to get the control. And my guess is everybody coaching in college football would say the same thing.
It's almost like if they collectively came together and like bargained something about all the money and like came up with a way for that to work. I keep going back to like, well, let's just change letters of intent. And this can only be for college football, maybe college basketball too, if they figure out a way that they're doing it as well. But those are the two ones that make enough money that the players should probably have a slice of the pie, especially in football. Get rid of letters of intent. Make them contracts. And I've thrown out the idea. I think 2 years is a good one. Give them 2 years so the coach knows, okay, these guys are under contract for this year and next year, or this guy still has 1 year left. And then you can decide whether, you know, they're getting re-signed or they're going to enter the transfer portal or what's going to happen there. And you share in the revenue. I do like how Harbaugh kind of points out, like, I mean, you're not like blowing the whistle on a government conspiracy. It's like, I realize that when people speak up for the voiceless that they try to get their character denigrated. And it's like, I don't think anybody's going to go out there and be like, Harbaugh's an idiot. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. No, nobody is that like transparent with how much they want to keep the money in house of the people at the top. But he is also right that I agree with him that the revenue should be shared with the players. They're the reason we watch the games.
The cynical part of me says that he's just saying that to save face with his players, with recruits, with their families, with collectives, because ultimately the decision would be more up to Ward Manuel, his boss, or Ward Manuel would have more of a say in it, because isn't Jim Harbaugh constantly flirting with the NFL? So like, what skin does he really have in this game?
It's just control.
And what skin is he going to put in the game, though, too?
What's this going to cost him?
No. I do think, though, every one of these guys, if they said, take $2 million off my salary, but I don't have to deal with this anymore. Am I going to go back to like being a normal college coach with some off time and structure? I think they'd all take it because they're all making so many of the millions. Like you'd give up. Would you go from $8 million to $6 million to not have the headaches?
When you're already a millionaire, wouldn't you rather just have more time
you'd
back?
Rather have more time back. Like right now, there's no time. By the way, I think the breaking news was there, Reese, was the cynical part of you. What's the other part?
Okay, so my gut reaction
is there
was like,
another?
Why is what does he care? Like
a
what
non-cynical
is this
cynical version of Reese?
He's got no skin in this. It's
who's
the silliest
that guy?
Damn
Where's
thing. Oh, Jim Where's Harbaugh he? Came out and talked about revenue sharing. Well, yeah, because he didn't care.
Someday Reese is going to hit his head on something and he'll be all glass half full.
Cracking
non-cynical Reese is hosting the podcast with Stafford's wife. Tuesdays with DeBerry coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends present Tuesdays with Tabari.
Sponsored by Sears Heating and Cooling. Family owned since 1950.
It is a Tuesday, a little after 10:30. Time to have a little chat with Uncle Dom, Channel 10 legend, Dom Tabari. What season is this going to be for you, bud?
42.
God bless. God bless. Unbelievable. In those 42 seasons, this will be, and all of them at Channel 10, correct?
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
Would that also be true, then, that this would be just the third time in the last 35 years of those 42 that Ohio State has been on Channel 10?
We had some games back when there was ESPN Regional.
Okay. With Gleason maybe calling the games? Was that time?
Yeah, we actually did some of those games. I did the part of the broadcast when it was Toledo. I did a couple games. So yeah.
Okay. But it's
pretty cool.
In terms of first time since the game against West Virginia, which was the first HD game ever, which I know you had a big part of that too, right? So this is the first time it's been on CBS since 98.
Yeah, that was down in West Virginia. Ohio State was ranked number one in the country. And that was fun. But yeah, this Saturday, 3:30, we've got it. As a matter of fact, we're doing an hour special the night before,
right.
7 to 8 p.m. on Friday. And then game time with Ryan Day, 9 to 10 on Saturday morning, and then kickoff at 3:30 on 10 TV. Pretty cool, isn't it?
It's very cool. I guess my invitation was lost in the mail.
You guys at radio get the game every week. Radio gets
a game
every week. Pretty
cool. Hey, it's not you guys. We're all one big happy family here.
We're one big happy family.
Yeah. My invitation got lost in the mail to be on the special on Friday, I guess.
Do you want to come down?
Yeah, I'm in. I'll be there.
All right.
You put me on the panel?
You're on. Just like
were
that.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Ryan Day will name a quarterback in an hour and a half?
I doubt it. I think what he will do is he's going to say that it's still too close to call. And I think here's where he's at. Now, I will be shocked if he names a quarterback today. But I think what he will do is say, listen, you know, practice is one thing. We have an idea. The competition's been great. These guys have been competing. But not until you make it live can you really tell. And I think that's what he's going to go into. Tim May and I were talking the other day. I mean, this could go a couple of weeks, Bo, but I think eventually he needs to name a starting quarterback. You know,
no, I agree with you, buddy. I think we're all on the same page. Like, this could go into the Western Kentucky game. I think he'd like to have a guy by Notre Dame. I do think that. I mean, you saw the Irish on Saturday. They look pretty damn good.
Well, that's one of the games that I said could sneak up on Ohio State. It's not going to sneak up. I mean, it's right there on the schedule. But, you know, I think Notre Dame is much, much improved from the team they were a year ago. And they looked pretty impressive the other day. Let's see how they look against the talent Ohio State will bring in there. But we all know teams have off nights, I don't think you want to be having a quarterback competition in a game of that stature.
I don't either. You talked to Coach Day, obviously, on the coach's show, know him well. This isn't how he would have wanted this to go, is it, Dom? With two of these guys, he would have liked to have had a guy by now, wouldn't he?
I would think. I mean, he said he wanted to have a starter by the end of the spring practice.
Right.
And obviously, you know, from what we gathered, the competition was pretty good. And then Devin Brown broke his finger and had to have some surgery. And so, you know, it's the position that everyone talks about. You know, we've heard for so many years, you know, the quarterback and the head coach, they get all the credit and they get all the blame more than their fair share. But that is the position everybody wants to know. Coach Day understands that. He played the position in college. I just think from what I've been able to gather that you could win with either one of these guys. Now, here's the deal, Bo. You're living in the world of the transfer portal and the NIL world. And we know that Kyle McCord got a nice NIL deal. I mean, I think he got a nice car and whatever. I don't know exactly what Devin Brown got. But
he'll get a lot more if he starts Saturday.
Whoever gets it is going to, you know, and so –
you got to be careful in today's world because, you know, you saw what happened with Joe Burrow. Here's a guy that, you know, graduated from Ohio State, but really never played here. Didn't get a shot because, you know, he was dealing with an injury. You know, they played behind JT Barrett, and then there was a competition between him and Dwayne. Dwayne got it. And you can't knock Dwayne Haskins with what he did. I mean, he set every record in the Big Ten. I mean, what are we talking about? The guy was phenomenal. But Joe Burrow goes to LSU, leads him to a national title, wins the Heisman, and you know, very well could be the Ohio State's greatest quarterback that never played here.
Yeah, yeah. What do you remember about the 78 battle when you were on the beat between Schliester and Rod Gerald, where Gerald went from quarterback to receiver?
Well, I just I didn't cover that, but I lived it because I was a fan.
You were there, and, though, right?
Yeah, thanks for doing that. If you want, we can go back to when Wes Fessler was coaching.
That's
too.
What I was curious sure. if you were on the Wes Fessler beat too. If that
yeah, I was on the Wes Fessler beat. Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Hey,
thank
what are you, you doing? What are you doing with? What are you going at Ramsey for all the time on your social? What are you doing there? Gordon Ramsay. You're going at him. You keep coming at him with, this is how I make Italian. This is how I make pizza. What's your objective?
I'm just showing him. I mean, the guy, I like him. I enjoy him. You know, we follow each other. I didn't know.
He follows you.
Yes.
Well, is that your most famous follow?
I don't know. Ryan Day follows me.
I think with all due respect to Coach Day and Coach Meyer, I think Gordon Ramsay probably has him beat in worldwide popularity.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I send him.
So you can direct message him then.
Yeah, I could if I want. I just send him my lasagnas and whatever I decide to cook that day. I'm just, you know, why not? You know, he follows me. I follow him. I figured we're no longer Twitter. It's X, right? Whatever the hell that
means. I don't know what the hell that means. I don't know what he's doing. I do think that a show with you and Ramsey, because Gordon Ramsay, I think, kind of has a lot of similar characteristics to the late great Earl Bruce, in that he didn't have a lot of patience for your act, like Coach Bruce, and I think he would call. I think he would ride you a little bit, like Coach Bruce did.
I would love it.
I would love it
because I mean, and it's fabulous because I do watch him, and one of the funniest is when he took two pieces of bread and put it up over that lady's head or whatever and said, what are you or whatever? And she goes, I'm an idiot sandwich. I mean, it's like, how do you get away with that?
Well, you could hear Earl saying that to you.
Yeah. Oh, well,
he
called me DA. You know what that was?
I do.
I remember one time I was going to go to the courthouse and change my name to DA. Well, that's appropriate. So anyways, you know, but no, I sent Gordon.
Nice.
He mainly, like, you know, I thought it was kind of funny. And next thing I knew, he started following me. I would just send him my recipes and stuff because other people he would just say, that looks like trash or whatever. And he actually followed me. So I don't know.
That's
maybe
great.
He likes it. Maybe he likes making my pasta. I will tell you this.
Go ahead.
I made pasta for baby Luciano's baptism. I made lasagna and rigatoni's, and it was out of the world. It was fabulous.
For the people who don't, I think most people probably, you have a real talent for the cooking, my friend, and as I've said many, many times. Do you call baby Luciano, you call him Lucky?
No. No, we're not.
Can I? Can I call him Lucky?
Well, no, please, no.
Ask Kels if I can call him Lucky. Please.
Lucky,
I mean, that's just perfect.
Lucky. Lucky
so
Luciano. Yeah, oh yeah, that's fabulous. Thank you. Who's your grandson
wonderful.
Named after? Well, Bo thinks he's named after the head of the Genovese family.
Well, he's very effective.
Oh yeah, well, he and Meyer started Vegas.
They did a nice job.
Them.
Yeah, they did a good job. Hey, I'll get you out of here on this. It is a game day Saturday. What is your one favorite tailgate food that you have to have? And I know, obviously, you cover all the games, so you can't do it. But, like, if you did, what would be your one go-to?
If I wasn't – I don't eat before the game because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
And I just – whatever. But to me, if when I can and when I decide I'm going to start tailgating and have a good time and enjoying, It's got to be Italian sausage.
So good.
Peppers and onions. I mean, that's I can eat that for breakfast, you know?
Yeah, that's as good as it gets.
Hot Italian sausage. Yep. I'll see you, buddy.
All right. The great Dom DeBerry, Channel 10 legend on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Thing or not a thing coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
Texas coach Steve Sarkisian responded to Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark's, quote, take care of business comments to Texas Tech. Sarkisian had this to say, you know, I got a letter from the commissioner about sportsmanship the day before that speech. So I'm trying to figure out what are we promoting to our student athletes and then go say those types of things. I'm not guessing that he's going to be having his Thanksgiving dinner with us the night before that game. Thing or not a thing? I'm not guessing that he's going to be having, whatever, thing or not a thing.
Yeah, it's an odd quote, right? I'm going to say not a thing. He was going to be asked about it. What do you want him to say? I mean, the real truth, if he could say it, would be, do you think I care? I'm going to be in the SEC next year with Arch Manning. Like, I don't care about what Brett Yormark has to say about little Texas Tech, little puny Texas Tech. He can have his Big 12 conference. I wish he'd gone full heel, honestly, and just leaned into it.
Yeah, it's not a thing, and I wish he had done the same. I wish he just said, oh, no, well, Greg Sankey's my boss. So mm-hmm. I don't know about this Brett or what he, you know, cares about Texas Tech, but if we're going to waltz into Lubbock and drop 45 on them, then he can, you know, we'll get a comment from him then. But it's silly by pretty much all parties involved. I do kind of wish Sarkisian was like, yeah, bleep that guy.
We're going to do a little bit here in the top of the next hour, but because of this last year, there's going to be so many of these awkward encounters with commissioners and bosses and teams that are leaving or have left them. I mean, wait till we get to the Pac-12.
Coach handshakes at the end of these types of games, too.
God.
What are those going to look like?
It's going to be awkward, man.
In a recent interview with the New York Times, Giannis Antetokounmpo made it clear he does not plan to sign an extension in Milwaukee this offseason, saying his goal is to win more championships, even if that doesn't come with the Bucks. Quote, winning a championship comes first. I don't want to be 20 years on the same team and not win another championship, end quote. NBA reporter Mark Stein says the Knicks and Lakers are two teams that have already plays for his services. The Lakers formerly employed Kostas Antetokounmpo as a two-way player, and New York reportedly made a run at Thanasis Antetokounmpo over the summer. Stein adds many believe both teams did so in part to help facilitate a future run for the former MVP. Thing or not a thing?
It's a thing, for sure. It's the first time any of this has ever come out of his mouth. He's never said anything like this before. It sucks for, I guess, does it? Isn't
they
it
got
better
a title.
To have loved? Isn't it better to have loved than to have never and lost than to have never loved at all? Like, that's like Milwaukee Bucks basketball. I mean, you won a NBA championship. You got Giannis for a decade. Like, if he wants to go at age 30 and go play for the Lakers and live in Los Angeles, God bless. I mean, it sucks, I suppose, for them, but like, I get it from his perspective.
Feels like he's sitting there in the locker room just telling everybody that he's not having fun anymore. Then he looks right into the camera and says, I want to be traded.
Oh, someone watched the most recent episode of Winning Time.
Oh, is that? Oh, yeah, that's why that was in my head. I do like also the like college sportsification of the NBA, at least in this article of like, well, these teams have employed his siblings before, so maybe he'd be into that. Is that like a package deal now with Giannis? Like, yeah, we'll get you free agency, $55 million a year, whatever, all that, but your brother, we're going to set him up with a condo. He's going to be on the back end of the roster. It's going to be real good. He can come along with you.
Right.
That's kind of what it feels like. Get his dad a job in the front office, too, while we're at it. Why not?
By the way, for those of you with kids, there's a Disney movie based on the Antetokounmpo lifestyle and everything that happened that's awesome. Great, great movie.
The NFL and WWE announced Monday that they've partnered on a multi-year licensing deal to sell NFL-inspired WWE title belts featuring the official colors, names, logos, and branding of all 32 NFL teams. The belts are already for sale through the NFL's and WWE's merchandising sites. The price is $549.99. The deal is the first ever licensing agreement between the NFL and WWE. Thing or not a thing?
So I remember when I saw this story yesterday, I thought to myself, who in the blue hell would want to spend $550 on a championship belt? And then I thought to myself, well, when's the last time you walked to the stadium in Cleveland? Because I'm guessing a lot of those people will.
Saw all the things those people are doing. Put
yep,
a guy jumps through a table at a Bills game, throw a belt on him. Yep.
One of the funniest things I've ever saw, and I don't follow wrestling like I did when I was a kid, but Ken Carmody, who hosts a radio show up there, had a great tweet yesterday where he said, I think this should be, whoever has this on in the Muni lot should be treated like, apparently there was like a 24/7 thing where like anyone could attack the champion at
any
point.
It was the hardcore championship.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
It's,
like,
it's defended 24/7.
If you're on the Muni lot walking around, anybody could like take you out. As if that place needed to be more chaotic.
I mean, a lot of the fans already look like Crash Holly, so they walk around with a weight scale and only 10 people got that reference. But yeah, you kind of watch your back on that. It's obvious. It's a thing, and I think a lot of people probably saw this coming once they started issuing championship belts to world champions.
Yeah.
Like they give them to whoever won the World Series or the Stanley Cup or the NFL or the Super Bowl. And it's just like, well, it's only a matter of time before everybody, you get a title belt and you get a title belt. But yeah, if you have it and you're walking around with it, you better be prepared 24/7. It's open season.
I feel like in the moment, the title belt is cooler when you're an athlete and you're in your prime and everything. You're at the parade.
Yes.
But overall, I think you'd rather just have a championship ring. Like, I can't imagine Patrick Mahomes when he's 60 running around with a belt.
Like a 55-year-old man should not be holding a Browns replica championship belt.
I think that's fair.
Although he might have been alive the last time the Browns... Nah, he might not have been.
Not quite.
Peyton
not quite.
In the official Manning-issued khakis and golf shirt with a WWE right. belt on? Nah.
And they'll sell maybe several dozen. Over the weekend at the World Track and Field Championships in Budapest, American sprinter Noah Lyles decided to throw some shade at the NBA. Lyles, a six-time world champion, took umbrage over the association using the term world champions to describe the team that wins the finals. Quote, you know what hurts me the most is that I have to watch the NBA finals and they have world champion on their head. World champion of what? The United States? Don't get me wrong, I love the U.S. at times, but that ain't the world. There ain't no flags in the NBA. And the entire league jumped on him. Kevin Durant, somebody help this brother. Devin Book, a couple of them had just like, what's going on? Facepalm emoji. And then Drake got into the action. Quote, he thought this speech was going to be so hard in the mirror the night before. Now the whole league doesn't rate you. Three crying face laughing emojis. Thing or not a thing?
Okay, so do you think that Noah Lyles, like, is he an American sprinter who did not grow up in America and has no idea what the NBA is? Is he not aware that, like, how many of the last three MVPs have been European?
He's born in Gainesville.
It just seems such an odd...
And like, is it,
I don't know what the
is
purpose
it purposely
of it is.
At the NBA, or is it just that that was the first league that popped into his head? And he just doesn't like that, like, you know, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA all say world champions because they're considered the top leagues of their sport.
I think he's trying to pump up his own accomplishment.
Yeah.
I mean, he won three but gold this is the, over this the weekend.
Is the, this is the wrong bone to pick here.
And also, like you said, like, I mean, if you are one of the best players, you do go play in the NBA.
Yeah, it's like he was like lived here, but then never watched. Is unaware of what the NBA actually is entirely. All right, coming up next, final hour, college football week win, some of the biggest storylines in a year that's going to be the last of its kind. We'll get to that coming up next. Bill Bender at the bottom of the hour. Bishop and friends are here on The Fan.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Tuesday. Captain's picks for the Ryder Cup announced. Zach Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Sam Burns make up the rest of the team that will play in the Ryder Cup. Wouldn't this be something that I would love this to be in, like, end of July, first week of August, the Ryder Cup. I know they just finished the Tour Championship over the weekend, but I'd love, there's a gap there from a sports viewer where this thing would really get the attention it deserves. Like, to go head-to-head with football is just a no-brain, is a no-win. You'd almost be better off doing it in the spring, honestly, in the middle of the spring. It's going to be so brutal to... it's hard to compete. It's something I have a lot of interest in, but in this time of year, you just I don't have the brain space for it.
And it doesn't have the same feel of like, you know, I'm thinking of like how that World Cup finished up with NFL season going on, the Men's World Cup this year. But it, yeah. One, you know, you got that championship right before the 1 p.m. game started. But also there's like an immediacy to one game that, you know, going head to head, where it's like a golf tournament is just such like a day long endeavor if you're going to check it out. And most people will probably just choose football over it.
Yeah. And there's a window. I just think all of these sports, you should be a little bit more open to moving your calendar around. We've talked about that before about the NBA, of maybe starting later, having that championship go a little bit later into the summer. I think the same thing's going to be true with college football. I think, you know, we played week zero last week. My guess is that'll end up being week one by the time the 12-team playoff really goes, because it's going to be really wonky in terms of that 12-team playoff, the dates that that's played out over the course of the end of December into January. By the way, on that front, tomorrow we have the big meeting between the conference commissioners on what we're going to do with the 12-team playoff. So that will come tomorrow. I think they're meeting in Dallas. I saw Nicole Auerbach reporting that I'm pretty sure it's in Dallas where they're going to meet and try to hash out where this thing goes. I mean, that feels like a two-person Petiti, Sankey, and everybody else, you're welcome to come, but honestly, opinions aren't necessarily needed.
Like, how much power are the other conferences actually going to have with any sort of pushback?
Who's representing what's left of the Pac-12? Like, is Kliavkov still... They had said he's doing nothing. Like, Andrew Luck's dad, isn't he a consultant? Luck's a consultant.
Do they still get a seat at the table? I guess they haven't officially announced that they're disappearing, so there's still a conference at this point, so I guess they'd still be invited.
You want to talk about being, like, embarrassed.
Can you imagine trying to speak up in that meeting? Like,
and you have four teams that are all trying to get to the ACC, or two of them are trying to get the ACC. The other one's trying to get to the Mountain West.
Hey, four teams. That's three more than Swarbrick represents.
That's true. That is. For now, at least, it's three more. They might have one more by the time we get to the end of the week. That story's still out there, by the way, that they had the tragic shooting at North Carolina yesterday, so that the president's athletic director conversation that was going to happen in the ACC between SMU and Stanford and Cal, that is pushed back. So that's the way that goes. And we'll get into that a little bit later in about 10, 15 minutes or so. We will play week one this week. You heard Dom, and I would say that would be a pay attention to the scores moment where he said he doesn't think Ryan Day will name a starter today. So does that linger into Thursday? Does that linger in? Is it a kickoff? Someone's got to go take the first snap. Feels like maybe that's kind of where we're headed. As it might be just something that you won't know until kickoff. So that's probably the way that thing's going to go. That press conference will carry live here at the Fan. That'll be a little less than an hour from now. In terms of the biggest storylines, go ahead, Chuck.
I was going to say, do you think if we get all the way to kickoff that Ryan Day would at least not do the full-on Urban Meyer and like the players don't even know until they're running out onto the field? You think he'd like let them know like pregame? At least, like,
what if he gets
going out first?
Yeah, I hope so. What if he gets cued and he's like, he runs Travion Henderson out there in Wildcat?
Good.
I've been calling for Johnson can do everything. Just play him.
He could do it.
Yeah. Direct snap offense.
He's in the block O, so he could certainly do it. This will be, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but this will be the last season of its kind for a great many reasons. Obviously, the end of the Pac-12. And the Pac-12 is going to go out with a bang. They've got a great league. They got Utah and Florida this week. Cam Rising is still at Utah, unbelievably. They've got a bunch of NFL-level quarterbacks. They've got a bunch of Heisman contenders, whether it's Nix or Penix. Obviously, Williams we saw last week. DJ Uiagalelei won the job at Oregon State on a team that a lot of people could shock everybody and win the league. So there is a lot to like about the final year of the Pac-12, and there will be, for me at least, it's going to be a little bit of melancholy. I mean, there was a regionalism to the sport that was always really cool. And I think it will still be there. It'll just be different. It'll be grossly different. Now, from our vantage point, we're much better. The Big Ten is better off. There's better television game, better television shows with Oregon and Washington in our league than there was previously. But at the same time, there was something nice about having that 10 o'clock late game that was on. In fact, NBC on the way back from the football game on Saturday said to me, we were talking about this. He said, Dad, why is Washington and Oregon going to the Big Ten? I'm like, well, which podcast you want to listen to? Pick any of the Bishop and Friends podcasts from the last month and it'll go over it all for you. But he said, that kind of stinks. Like, I like being able to watch those Pac-12 games late on a Saturday. Like, there'd be some fun matchups. And I think those matchups, by the way, will still just exist. They'll just be now include, you know, those four former Pac-12 teams and Big Ten teams. But this will be the end of that, and I will miss the league. I will miss it. And growing up kind of in the footprint of the Pac-12, it was cool to go to a game in Pullman, Washington, and think that you go play in the Rose Bowl if you won enough games, and that's going to go away after this year.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, after being down for 7 years or so, that the Pac-12 does seem to finally like have some footing and have some teams that are going to be national players this year with a lot of good quarterback play really buttressing that whole thing. But the regionality stuff, too, like goes along with like the Rose Bowl. Like, what's that going to mean going forward? Because it used to be, oh, Midwest Big Ten team coming in, taking on a Western team from the Pac-12. And it almost all this conference realignment, because this is something that like I never really got to experience in real time for myself. Like the idea of like interleague play, you know, there's people of a certain age who like all the, and like especially in baseball, like all that means so much that these go, you know, across leagues and they play each other throughout the year. It's like that on steroids, that now instead of like, oh, there's out of conference games where you might see these teams sometimes, it's these teams that were out west and it would be so crazy to have them on your schedule, and we'd schedule them 10 years out and oh, we're going to go to Washington in 2035, that kind of stuff. And now those teams are just going to be there, but will eventually that novelty wear off and we'll just get used to it. That's the thing that I keep going back to, is like there are some things that you are going to miss, and it stinks that it's changing, but overall people I think have always overreacted way too much on the like college football is going to fall apart. Like
no fine.
In fact, it's this is all happening because college football is so healthy, and while there's money to be made, the games will be played.
I mean, haven't we gone at least the past 5 years of an increase in viewership across all platforms?
Yep.
And that's likely going to continue this fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like NBC or Universal, whoever owns Peacock, is going to come and be like, we've never had this many eyeballs on our product. Look at us. Look at us go. It's like, yeah, that's what this is for. That's why all these different media entities are paying all these ridiculous amounts of money to get this, because we can't stop consuming it.
Two things jumped into my head as you were saying that, Reese. Like, think about this from the perspective of, from a television perspective, how much better the television shows next year will be in the SEC with Texas and Oklahoma,
right,
in those windows. Like, they lift everything else. And the same is true of the Big Ten with USC and UCLA and Oregon and Washington. It lifts everything else. You were talking, Chops, about, you know, that this is the first time in 7 years that the Pac-12 has kind of had like this murderer's row of teams where there's like, gosh, it's maybe 6-7 teams that could all play in a New Year's Six or play in a big bowl game, or maybe a couple of them that could even make the playoff. If this was the Pac-12 lineup, like this known, like let's just take this rock, you know, DJ's at Oregon State, Caleb's a returning Heisman winner at USC, Bo Nix is a Heisman contender at Oregon, Michael Penix is a Heisman contender at Washington. You got four teams in the top 25. If you just take this year and put that back a year in time, if that makes sense, does the Pac-12 still exist? Because if you go to ESPN, not at the $50 million number, but ESPN would be far more interested, I believe, in the Pac-12 as it stands right now than the unknown that the Pac-10 was a year ago. That's just all that happens in a year. It's hard for me to believe that if you took this group of teams to market and said, this is what we represent, there's 10 of us, we have a time zone to ourselves, we have all these quarterbacks, it's hard for me to believe that there's not a landing spot for them a year ago. And I think that the money that went to the Big 12 would have gone to them.
Well, the money was offered to them, so it would depend on whether or not...
But they were different, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, they're different teams.
Would the strength of these teams, the way they're set up now and the known entity of it, at least have gotten ESPN to come back to the table when the Pac-12 came back with, well, we did evaluation and it says that we should be worth $50 million. But with what they... Like, the health of the league as we see it right now, if they could have seen that last year, would ESPN have gone, we still think that number's too high, but okay, we'll play with you. Instead of that 31 number, how does 40 sound? And then that would put them easily at number two and still alive. And maybe then they start poaching Big 12 teams. The Big 12, just the fact that they made those moves so quickly to add all those American teams, that really helped them along this way, because then they said, here's a real entity that you can see of like what this product is going to be for. That was the hardest part, is you're right. Right now, it does look like the Pac-12 is actually really attractive. But last year at this time, with knowing USC and UCLA is going and not knowing what else is going to be there, it just wasn't attractive enough for the television deals.
No, but it's a good league.
Yeah.
This year.
Hypothetical. What happens when Jeff Bezos decides that he'd like to get involved with this? Do contracts just get ripped apart?
They were all locked in.
That's what I see coming. So like Jeff Bezos is the Star Destroyer looming over the planet.
It's Amazon, it's YouTube, it's Apple. I mean, there was a report last week that Apple would maybe buy ESPN. Just buy it.
Wouldn't Amazon be interested too?
Yeah. I mean, Apple's got more cash than anybody. Like, they could buy it in the seat cushions. They could buy ESPN. You know, so do they buy it and do they get involved in all of this? That's the next kind of thing here. I would say, though, you're not quite there yet. You're not quite ready for a full streaming. And I don't think that the streaming experience. So I stream and I won't cut a cord. I love a cord. The experiences are so much better. It's just better at cable. It is. I mean, it's hard for me to, I understand like the cost prohibitive nature of cable caused everyone to go to these apps. I get that. I understand why it happened, but you cannot tell me that the experience of sports is as good on an app as it is on cable. To me, I just reject it.
No,
it's slower. It's you have an ability to watch multiple games at once by bouncing around. Like if something gets bored, whatever, you can't do that on an app. You're stuck in the window. So, you know, I still think that they're not quite where they need to be with those apps to get to the point where it's as good as the experience was when it's on over the air.
No, and there's even that like that problem of when, even if you're somebody who's savvy enough and you know how to change the channels real quickly within apps, or you have something where it's a little bit more connected, so you can like look at like what's on a different streaming channel while you're still have it like that up on your screen. It still takes that like buffer moment.
Yeah, you got to catch up.
Whereas, yeah, even that like on the cable, I could see, yeah, that you can still just flick back and it's just there. It just
starts. Delay is still so huge too. Like one of my favorite things is to watch a Buckeye game while on social.
You can't.
I love that. And you cannot do it.
You can't. Well, you can't go all the way to the top of it at least. So.
Oh no, you're way behind. Like anybody who's like trying to like tweet reactions to plays and you're on a app, forget it. You're 2 minutes behind the live action.
Do you ever catch it and you go, oh, they're going to score on this play? And then you kind of know and you're excited, but you also, it takes away from it just a little bit.
I'm going to have to deal with it on Saturday because we play at the same time the Buckeyes do. So I'm going to have to be DVR'd and I hate it. It's going to be absolutely dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
I'm just going to text you like things that didn't happen during the game.
You guys, just brutal. I always tell everybody, like, I just turn the phone off, and I honestly might just put, like, a sign, like, don't talk to me about Ohio State.
What about, like vague wear things a shirt that didn't happen, but, like
dreaming on at quarterback?
You'll never believe what they did at quarterback.
That's always a good one.
James is using his final year of eligibility, and he's suiting up for the Buckeyes.
You're telling me
who's wearing 33? Who is that masked man?
You're telling me they're running this guy out there as a pass rusher? Just that. No,
well, hey,
no
look. Names. Threes. Oh no, he wore the Vicks. That's right. Did you guys see that Prime he's back. He's in good graces with Nike and they redid his, like he had an official shoe.
Right.
Deion Sanders had an official Nike shoe. They brought it back and he's wearing it. So he's back in the good graces with Nike. He was at war with them for a long time, but now he's back.
So did he get rid of his, what do you have, an Under Armour affiliation?
Under Armour. So he must have given that up because Colorado's a Nike school and there was no way around it. So he must have given that up in order
Or he's Deion and he's double dipping. He just says, why not? Isn't that something NBC said to you that he wanted to be, maybe I'm thinking of something else. Somebody had a kid who told them that they wanted to be an NBC, or I know what it was. Smash Williams said he was going to be a Nike and a Reebok and an Adidas guy.
Oh, Smash said that on Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm watching so much of it. It's just starting to feel like my real world.
Well, we watched a little bit of the movie last night. It was on on MTV. So we watched a little bit of the movie. It is so good, but it's just heartbreaking what happens to Boobie Miles. They also kind of underplay like how good Chris Comer was.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was actually like a legit back, as kind of the backup. Couple other things on college football I want to get to. SMU trying to buy their way into the ACC. Is it a dangerous precedent? And is this it? For Saban at Bama. I would never bet against him. I know Chops is a proponent of this. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bill Bender at the bottom of the hour. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Your home for the Buckeyes, Blue Jackets, and crew. And our sincere apologies for Common Man singing Creed songs. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Certainly one of the things that's going on in the sport is the ACC and SMU trying to buy their way in. There was a time, of course, that SMU was in the same conference as Texas. And That was something that was the old Southwestern Conference. Texas is heading to the SEC. Texas was picked to win the Big 12 this year. I was unaware of this. Brandon Marcello, great friend of the program with this, that this is the first time since 2009 that the media has picked Texas to win anything in the Big 12. And at that time in 09, they were picked to win the Big 12 South Division. Think about that. There was a, it was a game day, college game day. It was on one of the ESPNs last night. It was a college game day, college football special. And I'd never seen this. And it was Colt McCoy and being interviewed talking about the national championship game where he gets hurt on the opening drive. He separates his shoulder on, or either separated his shoulder or broke his collarbone on the opening drive. And it's like one of the great what ifs. And McCoy said, Texas never recovered from the game, and I never thought of it from that perspective. And Alabama was never the same either, because that's Greg McElroy wins the national, you know, he's the quarterback that wins the national championship for Bama that year, and then they stack him from that point going forward. But it's something that still bothers Texas. They never were able to shake the fact that if McCoy doesn't get hurt, do they win that game? Because remember, Texas went right down the field in that game, and then McCoy gets hurt inside the five, and you wonder that. McElroy was quick to fire back that it's not that both running backs went over 100 yards. It was would have been Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram. Both were over 100 yards in the game, and he said something to the effect of, well, Colt McCoy didn't play defense, so I'm not sure that would have made a dang bit of difference. But you could tell it bugged him a little bit that there was kind of that asterisk around it.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop Texas, though, anytime they get any little bit of momentum to claim that they're back. And this year definitely has that momentum. Like, what is it going to be like if they do pull off the upset against Bama? Something that I think is very possible. And, you know, I would go as far as to say I do think Texas is going to win that game. But I
need to see them both first. I got to see them both first. Like, is Sark ready to go into Tuscaloosa? It's in there. It's at Bryant Denny. Mm-hmm. Is he ready to go into there and do that?
I think the other big thing, though, is I also, with Sark, I don't believe that he can keep it together all year. Like, I think they have enough. I think they have enough talent, and I think they have the pieces to go in there and actually beat Bama, especially second week of the season. While Bama has some question marks under center, and, you know, you don't exactly know, like, are they fully bouncing back from last year back to the Bama of old, or was that the start of a decline? But also with Sark, I just think going through the whole season, they're going to drop a head scratcher in there, maybe two, and not actually fully fill that out. You know, it's similar to, like, they forgot to tell this in that documentary of Untold. It was like, Manziel beat Alabama, and then he went on to win the Heisman. It's like, yeah, but what happened the rest of their season, guys? What happened to the rest of Bama?
The next year, what happened?
And that's a little bit of a problem with Bama sometimes, is they're kind of a Super Bowl type team. For teams, but especially for Texas' sake, well, if you beat Bama in week two, yeah, it's going to mean a lot. You're going to have to prove it the rest of the year.
It's like a character in a video game not ready to face the final boss 10 minutes into the damn thing.
Yeah,
like, this is if you were playing Legend of Zelda and all of a sudden 5 minutes into hitting start, there's Ganondorf staring at you. I mean, it's a night game. It's at Alabama. It's like, does this Texas team feel ready to do that week two?
Well, and
do you trust this Texas team under Steve Sarkisian to go in and do that, right?
No, I don't. No, because he just doesn't have a track record of that. I mean, I'm not sure he should have the Texas job. Go look at the Washington, the USC track record. I mean, he's had some of the best jobs, and somehow he keeps failing upwards. It's remarkable that he got that job and that they rolled with him.
Is there anything they
tried Urban? Remember, they tried for Urban. I think they tried for Saban too. I mean, it's just I'm the state of Missouri when it comes to Texas. Show me. Got to do it. See it to believe it. Are you on them like you were on Tennessee last year, Chops, or just against Alabama?
Just against Alabama, because like I said, I do think that they won't be able to hold that focus for the whole year. I'm also curious to see like what happens. You know, they're, according to Tipico Sportsbook here, they are 35-point favorites against Rice. Well, what if that holds true and they get up early and then Arch Manning comes in? I think that's going to be a distraction this year.
He wouldn't name the backup. Sark wouldn't. Quinn starts, but he won't name the backup because they have that Malik Murphy kid who was great in the spring. And Murphy would get big offers if he were to hop into the portal. So we'll see how all of that goes.
I'll tell you what, Chops, to your point, if Ewers plays really well in the first half, they're up 35. Quinn comes in and he plays phenomenally. Like, tell you what, we say social media is a tough place to watch a game, that next week against Alabama, Texas Twitter is going to be the most fun place to watch that Alabama game.
If Arch plays well coming in reserve against Rice, and Quinn is not looking so hot at the beginning of the Bama game, oh boy.
Well, and Quinn's one of their own. I mean, he's a Texas, he's South Lake Carroll. You know, I mean, he's one of their own cats for sure. By the way, we continue to do this show in Columbus, Ohio, and we talk about the Ohio State quarterback situation. Saban still hasn't named one.
I think it's going to be Milroe, but I.
Me too.
But well, I don't think he wants it to be. Okay, stop asking about the quarterback situation.
Here we sit.
Timer hasn't gone off in the oven.
They don't have one yet. Bill Bender on all of this coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
1, 2, 3. The Daily Coach Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by Credit Union of Ohio and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Us. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, one of our favorite things to do, talk a little college football with our good buddy Bill Bender. Covers the sport at the Sporting News at a very, very high level, about as high as it gets on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Hey, pal, are you surprised Ryan Day doesn't have a starter yet?
No, it's he declined last night, I saw. I don't know if they're going to take this to do the Nick Saban thing and take this to the first snap on Saturday morning. I am a little bit surprised that it's not out there, even if they know inside the building what's going to happen on Saturday.
Yeah, me too. You mentioned Saban. Nothing from him yet either. Are you hearing anything down there about, it feels like Milroe experience, right? But it feels like, I mean, he's got a week to figure it out. He's got Texas next week.
Right. And if I had to guess, I would say Milroe probably takes the first snap. If he doesn't and it's Buckner, that tells you right there what the situation was like in the spring, that they didn't have Tyler Buckner down there, obviously. Milroe will change the way they play offense, too. They're going to obviously cater to his skill set, which he's a very dynamic runner, but not the most accurate downfield passer.
Well, Bill, I said that earlier on the show today in regard to the competition here. Like, if it's Devin Brown, then that's a big deal to me, because that means he overcame the experience that Kyle McCord has, and that he obviously has something that Ryan Day likes that Kyle maybe does not. Whereas if it's Kyle, I still think it can still be viewed as a very open competition, if that makes sense.
Yes, and it would mean that Kyle, you know, we saw him in the spring game. It really hurts us as media people, I suppose, that we didn't see Devin Brown in the spring game because of the injury, because then maybe we would have more of a feel of it. Obviously, Ryan Day gets paid a lot more money to have that feel. And like you said, I think the fact that Devin Brown has taken this competition this far suggests whether it's his mobility, his accuracy, his command of the offense around the receivers they have, or the combination of their running game. You know what, Bill? We haven't talked a lot this summer, at least I haven't with you, about Ohio State's running game, which I think is going to be very good and very important early in the season.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, when I led the show Monday, I mean, that's kind of what I led with. Was like, I think Ryan Day just needs the layups to be layups, right? I mean, you're going to hand it to a lot of really talented guys. You have the best receiving core in college football. They're going to get open a lot. You got the best play caller in college football, him and Lincoln Riley. There's going to be big windows to throw into. Like, I just need you to not blow it. You know, you don't want a quarterback to have the mentality, but that's kind of the approach, I would think.
It's almost like a next-level game manager, if you think of it that way. And a guy that when they get in the big-time games against Notre Dame and Penn State and Michigan, that he can go out there and make a couple next-level throws on third down outside the hashes to a Marvin Harrison or an Emeka Egbuka. And they've got time to get ready for that Notre Dame game. I'm not looking past Indiana. I understand that. But I'm just going on the fact that, what is it, 1988 was the last time Indiana beat Ohio State? I think they're going to be okay on Saturday.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You mentioned that. And when you're talking about that schedule, I mean, you got to look at Notre Dame like I did. And I think a lot of us who watch a lot of college football are aware of how good Sam Hartman was at Wake Forest, but I certainly understand that many of you out there maybe weren't watching Wake Forest games on a Saturday out of Winston-Salem, but he can spin it, and it looks to me like they looked really good to me, Bill. What did you make of their debut?
I don't think it's an understatement to say He's the best quarterback they've had since Brady Quinn. I mean, I'd start there. And the way that he can throw it down the field, distribute it to the receivers he has are more talented than the ones he has had at Wake Forest. And they had A.T. Perry down there. You know, Jaden Greathouse, the freshman, popped right away. Their running game looked good behind that offensive line. It is going to be a battle when Ohio State goes up there. I still think Ohio State, obviously, the more talented team, more frontline talent. And it's still on Notre Dame to beat them, which they haven't done in my lifetime. But, I mean, it got me excited to go to South Bend and watch that game. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think the Buckeyes have three. I'm really high. I don't know where you are. I'm really high on Penn State and this team that Franklin has. If he can make this team should go. They kind of have they check every box. And obviously, Michigan's going to start in the top five in the country. I really think Ohio State's going to play three top 10 teams by the time all is said and done.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think Penn State's going to come out Saturday night and blow out West Virginia and make a little bit of a statement there with all that talent that James Franklin has. And you and I have talked about this before where, you know, over the last 10 to 15 years, you could make the argument the Penn State game's been more of a problem for Ohio State in some ways. I mean, there were two Penn State-Ohio State games back-to-back years that, if we're being honest about it, the Nittany Lions should have won. Mm-hmm. But some things got in the way. JT Barrett got in the way. Ben Victor got in the way. And Ohio State got out. So I still think the pressure's on James Franklin to prove that he can beat Ohio State in a place where they haven't won since 2011.
Last year, the Pac-12, and it's just loaded. It's loaded. We saw Caleb Williams last week. They still have a lot of the same issues, I think, defensively, but they're obviously going to be there because of their offensive firepower. You got Heisman contenders and Bo Nix at Oregon and Michael Penix at Washington, and maybe DJ gets going at Oregon State on a roster that's really, really good. Cam Rising still at Utah. We'll see them Thursday against Florida. I grew up in that footprint, Bill, and it's odd for me to think that that conference isn't going to exist anymore, but I guess at least they get to go out in a blaze of glory, because this is going to be a fun league to watch this year.
Oh, quarterbacks all over the place. Good offensive teams. Fun storylines. USC kind of opened it up with Caleb Williams and Zachariah Branch. I was kind of picturing USC playing against Ohio State over the weekend after watching that and how fun that game could be if those two cross paths this year with it. But Caleb Williams isn't going to stay for next year, obviously.
No.
Time games. Washington's going to be good. Oregon, a lot of people like that. I'm seeing them on more playoff picks than I thought I would, and that's a tribute to another veteran quarterback in Bo Nix that we're going to sit there and watch and be like, he's been there forever, but they're going to score a ton of points.
Well, and you know they'll be physical. They were physical here 2 years ago, so you know they're not going to be afraid to punch people in the mouth, which is something that, you know, Lincoln's teams really haven't done at USC. How closely are you monitoring what the ACC is got going with Stanford, Cal, and SMU?
I mean, we have our feelers out, obviously, and I'm ready to react if it happens, and I think it's going to happen. There's a lot of smoke there, and you know what? Like, around the realignment, the biggest winner is SMU, in my opinion, because this is a program that post Pony Express was given the death penalty. The program was dead, and now they're going to be on the big show again. The way they're doing it is patently absurd, though, Bo. To not take money for 7 years and have your boosters kind of flip that bill, it is an incredible example of the absurdity of college football. That is how I would put it.
Oh, I agree. It's a fascinating play, though, right? Like, you're just buying your way in. And they have an ability to do. They have ability to do it. Now, you and I are of a similar age, so I'm curious. I actually think SMU. I'm not sleeping giant. I'm not saying that they could, you know, going to be the top five team in the country, but I do think SMU playing regularly against Florida State and Clemson and Miami, that program will get juice. And that really maybe all they ever needed was the stage. I mean, it's in Dallas. It's a cool brand. To me, it just feels like that could be. When I look at the teams that the Big 12 added, to me, SMU's branding is better than almost all of them.
Yeah, and they're in that Texas footprint where we mentioned how people can get a little crazy down there about football in Texas. Just look at the high school stadium. So, yeah, it could be. And they've done it before. Now, granted, the last time they did it, it was done. Now they can do it that way.
They can. It's all legal.
So, yeah. the way they got Eric Dickerson and Craig James and some of those superstars, they can do that now. And yeah, if they go out and do it, and I will say, perfect aside, I love their uniforms. I've loved SMU's uniforms on the TV for some reason.
Well, it's beautiful. You rarely see that bright blue with the red. I mean, it just looks spectacular. Yeah, it's gorgeous. All right. In terms of this weekend, which games, what are your favorite games for this weekend that you're most excited to see?
I mean, LSU Florida State's the obvious answer because that's a huge piece of the puzzle. But there are others. I mentioned peeking in on Penn State. I'm going to have to find Peacock to find Michigan, I suppose. And
yeah,
but I mean, that's not a game I'm super excited about watching East Carolina. South Carolina, North Carolina will be fun with the quarterbacks, Drake May and Spencer Rattler. And then, you know, from there, Thursday night, I'll be tuned into Nebraska, Minnesota. I want to see what Matt Rule's all about with the Huskers and whether or not they can win a one-score game from now on.
It's kind of nice to get a Thursday night need two screens because that's Florida, Utah as well. So we're going to be able to two screen those on Thursday, buddy.
I know, and I'm excited about that. Friday's not the greatest schedule. I know there's a lot of talk about the Miami versus Miami game, but I have no comment because my Ohio Bobcats are 0-1.
Well, but hopefully Rourke is back and ready to go for this week. Our boots on the ground down in Athens tell us that he'll play this week against the mighty Long Island team.
Yeah, well, that's good. And, you know, it's could have, would have, should have, but they still had a chance to tie the game at the end of the game. So they're always going to be in the fight. It's fun. I am so glad. I hope this realignment gets done today.
Me
because
too.
Then we can just solely focus on football from Thursday through Monday.
Couldn't agree more. Great talking to you as always, my friend.
Hey, no problem, Bo. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, that's the great Bill Bender of the Sporting News joining on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We get three things on a Tuesday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what do we have in the poll?
The Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by Dick Masheter Ford, asks, outside of Michigan, which game on Ohio State's schedule do you view as the toughest? Right now, 51% of respondents say at Notre Dame, 31% say home against Penn State, 17% say at Wisconsin.
I think the correct answer is Notre Dame for now. We really need to see Wisconsin and Penn State play.
Yeah.
We need to see Drew Aller play against West Virginia Saturday, and we need to see a month's worth of this offense at Wisconsin.
That's another reason why it's easier to say at Notre Dame right now, because we have seen them play, and they look pretty good.
Yeah, they do. And Hartman's the real deal, certainly. All right, time for three things. Hit it.
One, two. Three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
Number one for me, last night at sixth grade football practice, I felt like a sting on my knee, and I slapped and knocked an insect of some sort off of my knee, but I clearly was bitten. And through last night, it kind of itched a little bit, but was not much of a big deal. I got to tell you, all morning, it's like gotten worse and worse and worse. Now, I don't know what type of flying insect has like a progressive bite pain, but it definitely was not a mosquito, because that doesn't do that. Could it be a wasp?
Horsefly?
I don't know. That's legitimately bite, asking. Though. Like this, I mean, it hurts. My left side of my knee legitimately hurts now.
This is how the zombie apocalypse starts. Yeah,
could be. Yeah, that's how it goes.
First one for me yesterday, just scrolling through Twitter, had to tell J-Lo, wait a second, you got to pause Friday Night Lights. I have something to watch. And I watched this 90-second video because when I saw, you know, it playing without the sound, recognized a face I hadn't seen in a while, at least not in black and gold, but it was Ricky Stanzi. And he was filming a hype video for the Hawkeyes.
Oh, boy.
I had to check that out. Yeah. Hype videos don't always do it for me. Sometimes I think they're all kind of generic, and I get it. You know, everybody has big plays. You can make a cool highlight package. They're fun, but they don't really do it. But I saw Ricky Stanzi, and I was like, nope, halt the presses, stop everything we're doing. I have to check this out. Stanzi's the manzi, and he's back.
First thing for me, Jack's Pub in Milwaukee has a promotion running for every New York Jets game this season. If Aaron Rodgers and Gang Green go down, Jack's Pub will pay the drink tab for every patron in attendance.
Jeez.
Milwaukee has like the most bars per capita, so I don't know how busy their bars
get. Pretty petty promotion.
Yeah, that would be a lot of free booze potentially, right? No one thinks they're going 17-0. Number two for me, watching the most recent episode of Winning Time last night. And because I know the history of this, I'm not really that interested in the story. And I do sometimes feel like they're trying to tell too many stories at once. Like what I think's most interesting is the bus stuff. And I wish like the basketball was more like on the perimeter. I think the ownership, the bus stuff is far more fascinating. But I do think this, I think there have some missteps. But I do think this is true. I don't know that you could have cast this better across the board. The guy for Kareem, it's tough, like casting someone for Kareem, casting somebody for Magic, like they have to physically look like, and they kind of have to play like him a little bit. The Bird cast I talked about last week, I don't know that anyone has ever cast anything better than they cast this show.
Even down to like Adrian Brody is Pat Riley, like that.
Same thing with the guy, I'm blanking, Jason Siegel, is that a name?
Yeah, played, Jason Siegel, plays Westhead.
Yeah, plays Westhead, like he's perfect.
And all the people have to be relatively tall, and they are all tall enough. They're not as tall as some of the people they're portraying, but they're tall enough.
Yeah.
Second one for me, I visited New York enough times to understand that there's, you know, the exchange rate of the ideas of certain things just cost more. I mean, you can as easily as just like walking into a McDonald's and looking at the prices. Things cost more in New York, and that's fine. But even with that being true, this just does not sound worth it. And you are being ripped off, people, by the whole system here. There are pickleball courts right now in Central Park. You can rent them for $80 per hour off peak times. $120 an hour during peak times. This guy who's reporting it, Mike Dixon, he says they're all taken when he went there. Why? Why are you doing this, people? There's plenty of places you could play pickleball that's not in Central Park that doesn't cost you this much.
Are there?
There's courts everywhere in New York. You can figure out how to play pickleball. I don't know if they're pickleball courts. There's racquetball type courts. Yeah. There's courts everywhere for things.
I know this in the Tri-Village area. There are now there were what were tennis courts. They've set up as pickleball courts.
Well, good.
In several parks.
I know people like want to go at pickleball, and it does suck on television. Like it doesn't have to be that, but it is so much more accessible and fun for everyone right away than tennis.
Unless it costs $120 an hour.
Unless
to play.
It costs that, yeah.
And that'll be my second thing. It's accessible and people enjoy it. So just let people enjoy it.
Let them live. Let's do it, make to you. So we were watching the Friday Night Lights movie with NBC last night, and we watched. I mean, it was up against his bedtime, so we didn't get all the way to the end of it, but we got through the Boobie Miles injury and all of that stuff. And it, I guess, I hadn't seen the movie in a long time, but obviously Buddy Garrity is in the movie and the series,
yeah.
And Tammy Taylor is in the movie and the series, and the series is shot just like the movie because, of course, Peter Berg directed the movie and then was the executive producer and showrunner of the series. And it got me thinking, has any singular piece of intellectual property been better used than that book by Buzz Bissinger, which is a tremendous book? It's a great movie, and it's an all-time series. Like, they crushed all of it. There's not one miss. They're all great.
That's the thing, is though, like the batting average there being 1,000, that it's hard to argue that it did what it needed to do.
They all crush.
Last one for me. I think there should be like the initial question when you walk in to drop your car off at the mechanic goes, do you know anything about cars? And if I say no, don't ask me anything. Just do what you need to do. Like, I brought my car in for an oil change, and he's asking all this stuff. And I'm like, whatever you did last time, it ran between the last oil change and this one. Just do that again. It's
running back.
Speaking of running it back, John Rothstein says Chris Holtman told him Zed Key's been fully cleared for all basketball-related activities as of earlier this morning. Key was injured for the last half of the season, really, and then had off-season shoulder surgery. So a big get back for the Buckeyes, who can use as much big man presence as they can get because, oh yeah, Zach Edey's back.
Yeah, good for Coach, good for Zed.
Could be a key for them this year.
Ryan Day up next. Will we have an answer? Stay tuned. Bishop and Friends right here at the Fan.
If you're looking for the radio home of the crew, you've come to the right place.
Because if we weren't, this promo would be very stupid.
Proud to be your crew station, the Fan.
This
This is a Fan Action Update.
The Braves and Dodgers have separated themselves a little bit in the odds to win the World Series. Atlanta still has the best record in all of baseball. They're 3-1 to win it all, and the red-hot LA Dodgers are plus 360. After those two, you will find the Astros at 7-1, Orioles 9-1, Rays 10-1, and the Mariners and Rangers come in at 12-1. For your Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FIRST.